I hereby call this meeting to order, but before we begin, it is Commissioner Cohen's birthday today. We are not singing at her request, but we are all together on the count of three going to say happy birthday. One, two, three, happy birthday!
Thank you.
Okay. All the representatives of the commission are present. I'm Lieutenant Governor Eleni Kounalakis. Join us today is State Controller Malia Cohen, Deputy State Controller and Commissioner. I'm so sorry. Let me start again here. Joining us today is State Controller Malia Cohen. We are also joined by Michelle Perrault, representing the Department of Finance. Mr. Dumlow. Dr. Dumlow.
Madam Chair, we have a quorum present. In addition, I would like to identify members of the staff of the commission participating for this hybrid meeting. Public speaker announcer Michelle Pelka and meeting liaison Kim Lunetta are participating virtually.
Wonderful. Okay. So for the benefit of those in the audience, the State Lands Commission manages state property interests in over 5 million acres of land, including mineral interests. The commission also has a responsibility for the prevention of oil spills at marine oil terminals and offshore oil platforms and islands, and for the prevention and for preventing the introduction of marine invasive species into California's marine waters. Today, we will hear requests and presentations involving the lands and resources within the commission's jurisdiction. I'd like to take a moment to acknowledge and express gratitude for the Nisenan, Wintun, Miwok, and Maidu people who have inhabited the Sacramento River corridor, valley, and foothills for countless generations. I'd also like to take a moment to honor the California Native American communities all across the state for persisting, carrying on diverse cultural and linguistic traditions, and sustainably managing the land that we now share. Native people have maintained a constant presence on the landscape for many thousands of years, and they are essential stewardship partners, whether along the coast, along our rivers and valleys, or in our fragile deserts. We thank California Native American communities for participating in this commission's activities and for their essential role in maintaining and adding to our state's rich cultural legacy. Now, I'd like to turn it over to Dr. Dumlow to quickly share some instructions on how we can best participate in this meeting so that it runs as smoothly as possible.
Thank you, Chair Kounalakis. There are two public comment sessions. We will take public comment during the first session for a maximum of 30 minutes due to the extent of our meeting agenda. Our second public comment session occurs at the end of our meeting. If you would like to speak during our open public comment period or during a public comment period that is part of an agenda item, please complete an electronic request to speak form available on our homepage. We will take those members of the public who are here in person first, and then hear comments from those members of the public who are participating virtually. We will call on you in the order in which you submitted the electronic request to speak form. For those participating virtually, please make sure you have your microphones or phones muted to avoid background noise. To help us call on you through Zoom, please raise your hand during the appropriate comment section one or two ways. First, if you're attending on the Zoom platform, please raise your hand in Zoom. If you are new to Zoom and you joined our meeting using the Zoom application, click on the hand icon at the bottom of the screen. When you click on that hand, it will raise your hand. Second, if you are joining our meeting via phone, you must press *9, not pound, but star on your keypad to raise your hand to make a comment. If you are calling in and want to view the meeting, including the PowerPoint presentations, please view the meeting through the CalSpan live webcast link. There will be a slight time delay, but it will avoid an echo or feedback using your Zoom application and your phone. We will call on individuals who have raised their hands in the order that they are raised using the name they registered with or the last three digits of their identifying phone number. You may receive a pop-up indicating you are being promoted to a panelist. Please be sure to accept the invitation. After you are called on, you will be unmuted so that you can share your comments. Please also remember to unmute your computer or phone and identify yourself. Remember, you have a limit of 2 minutes to speak on an item, which may be adjusted as needed to ensure all speakers have a chance to speak. Please keep your comments respectful and focused. We will mute anyone who fails to follow those guidelines or, at worst, dismiss them from the meeting. If anyone is having logistical or technical difficulties, please don't hesitate to reach out to slc.helpdesk@slc.ca.gov. The Commission has also established an email address to compile public comments for our meetings. The address is csl.c.commissionmeetings@slc.ca.gov. I have received various emails from parties that have been shared with all the commissioners prior to the meeting. If we receive any emails during the meeting, they will be shared with our commissioners and be made available on our website, www.slc.ca.gov, along with the public comment emails we already have received. Chair Kunalakis, that concludes my hybrid meeting instructions. We are ready to move to the adoption of the minutes.
Thank you very much, Dr. Doomlau. And I just want to underscore that for the first public comment, we will limit it to 2 minutes per person. Generally, if I see more than 15, 20 people signed up on one item, in order to be able to hear from everyone, we shorten it to 1 minute. That may happen on one item that we have today, I believe. So I just would like members of the public to know that as soon as possible so they can adjust their public comments to fit within that time frame. Okay, the next item of business will be the adoption of the minutes from the Commission's meeting of November 7th, 2025. May I have a motion and a second?
Second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Cohen and a second from Commissioner Perrault. Any objections to a unanimous vote? Motion passes unanimously. The next order of business is the Executive Officer's Report. Dr. Doomlau, may we have that report, please?
Yes, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, everyone, commissioners, members of the public. We have a detailed executive officer report on the website, and I encourage everyone who is interested in the work we do to check it out. For my presentation today, I want to highlight three things the commission is working on. First, the commission is working diligently to implement a coastal access program at Hollister Ranch in Santa Barbara County. Hollister Ranch is part of a 60-mile section of the Santa Barbara coast with very little coastal access. In fact, only 5 miles are available for public use. The commission is part of the Hollister Ranch Coastal Access Program state agency team, along with the Coastal Commission, State Coastal Conservancy, and state parks. We recently held in-person community engagement workshops in Santa Barbara County, as well as a virtual workshop to share and receive input on 6 different draft options that offer ways for the public to access the coastline at Hollister Ranch, while balancing the natural and cultural resource sensitivities, protecting private property owner rights, public safety, and feasibility. This is all part of a pre-CEQA effort as we get ready to develop an environmental impact report for the Coastal Access Program. Second, staff continues to work with the San Francisco Bay Conservation and Development Commission, or BCDC, to develop public trust guiding principles for waterfront development along the San Francisco Bay. Stakeholder outreach will begin in early 2026 with a focus on how climate adaptation projects and waterfront development can meet the public's needs for and uses of state tidelands around the Bay Area. Third, I am pleased to announce that next year the commission will be developing a new strategic plan. It's that time again. And it will guide our work for the next 5 years. I anticipate our strategic plan will build on the commission's progress since the adoption of the previous strategic plan and identify the emerging challenges and opportunities the commission is committed to addressing over the next 5 years and beyond. We look forward to engaging with commission stakeholders, our internal commission staff, tribal partners, and members of the public in this process. And we look to bring that report or that strategic plan to the commission for a vote sometime next year. Lastly, we could not do the work we do without our hardworking staff, and I'm pleased to announce that we have brought on 6 new staff members, including Prashika Maharaj, sorry, Prashika She joined the commission as an accounting administrator too. Danish Virgil Ibasco joined the commission as a marine safety specialist. Brandon Elliott and Tanaya Ellis joined the commission as marine safety inspectors. And Anthony Yanto joined the commission as a marine safety specialist. Lastly, Apurva Behel joined the commission's legal division as an attorney. So welcome to the team, and thanks for joining the State Lands Commission. And that concludes my executive officer report.
Thank you, Dr. Jumla, for that report. And I want to also underscore, welcome to all of our new team members and staff at State Lands Commission. But before we move on, Commissioner Cohen had a question for you, Dr.
Great, thank you very much. Good afternoon, everyone. Happy holidays to everyone. Dr. Jumla, a question for you about the strategic plan. Is it customary for this body to work on it every 5 years? Will this be like a refresh, or is this?
That's been the history
the
in
history,
recent
okay.
years.
Okay.
We've done two strategic plans that I'm a, yeah, only two, yeah. Mm-hmm. Two plans, and so this would be the third in our history.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the last two were all five-year plans.
Mm-hmm. And so when we reflect back the last 10 years now of strategic plans, I know I'm looking at you, but you can look to staff too, because you and I are both are relatively new. Have we accomplished our goals? Are we meeting what we're laying out? Let's see, the strategic plan leads a pathway of where we would like to go. When we reflect, are we meeting our mark?
That's a very good question. That, you know, the strategic plan has done a good job of outlining our priorities and identifying the issues that we want to work on as a commission. I think part of the update for our strategic plan is to ask that question and get feedback from not only our staff, but also external partners that we work with to say, hey, are we doing a good job with, for example, tribal outreach or environmental justice priorities? So, you know, I'm very curious to hear how other people on our
would
staff
evaluate.
And our stakeholders feel how, you know, how we're doing. So,
are there metrics built into our strategic plan that allows us to quantify our success?
That's a good question. I believe we had some metrics in our strategic plan, but a lot of it was very aspirational and not granular, you know, not granular targets.
So, for example, sticking with the example you gave about tribal outreach, we want to conduct five meetings and we want to get at least a 30% attendance rate, just as an example. I was just wondering, you know, I am the controller, and so I am paying attention to the two numbers and all... by all definitions, but that's just another way that we can begin to mark our success too, is by just saying we'd like to increase our newsletter outreach by 15%.
Right.
My two cents.
I couldn't agree more. I think, you know, putting in concrete metrics helps with us, you know, to set a target and actually meet the target. If you say something that's too vague or too aspirational, it's hard to know did you actually meet that goal. So I will be looking at our current strategic plan to see if that is something that needs to be improved. And yeah, like I said, look forward to feedback from others on.
Here's another suggestion: increase our budget by 100%.
Commissioner Peralt.
I thought I would still just put it out there because the policy work is just so incredibly important. Yeah. We just need the governor to back it with some money. Okay, we move on. Back to you, Louie.
Yes, of course. Commissioner Peralt.
In all seriousness, though, just to piggyback, I want to underscore the controller's comments, and I think that they're important. I think oftentimes, you know, and I've done my fair share of strategic plans with boards, and, you know, oftentimes we create them, and then they go on this shelf if they're not tied to anything. And so, you know, I just... Two things. One, I agree completely with where the controller's going. I think it could be helpful. You know, 5 years is a long time period. So if there's like an annual business plan that comes alongside that has got some metrics tied to it that then could, you know, you could bring, I'm just throwing this out, at the end of each, you know, year, you could bring it to the commission to just say, these were the goals that we set out within our larger plan this year. This is kind of where we're at. I think it's helpful. One, it gives a little bit of a roadmap, but two, you know, those of us up here change. The seats here change. Mm-hmm. And so for the ability of making sure that there is some historical, you know, tracking when this when folks move around, both from a staff level but also at the table here, I think it helps for folks to know where we're still trying to get to. And again, understanding not everything's quantifiable, but again, I think that that is helpful. So I just want to kind of just, again, support where the controller's
Absolutely.
Going with this.
Great suggestions.
Okay. So thank you again for that report. Before we move on, I would like to take a few minutes to reflect on the work of the State Lands Commission over the past year and share some highlights. Not from the last 5 years of the specific plan or the strategic plan, but at least from 2025. It has been my honor to serve as chair of State Lands Commission for the fourth time since I was elected in 2018. And while I'll be on this commission for another year, this also marks my final time serving as chair. So as we conclude the commission's 87th year, it feels important to me to pause and acknowledge both the scope and significance of what we have accomplished together. This, in particular, has been a very busy year for the commission. In a typical year, the commission meets about six times. In 2025, we held eight formal commission meetings, along with one town hall. That town hall was a last-minute pivot when extreme weather made it impossible for enough commissioners to reach the scheduled meeting location to establish a quorum. In fact, Commissioner Perrault's flight was diverted all the way to Las Vegas. While the town hall was not exactly how we planned it, it did ultimately reflect our commission's commitment to transparency, adaptability, and public access, even under challenging circumstances. So to give a sense of the volume of the work of the last year and that is regularly before us, I'd like to share a few statistics from this year. In fiscal year 24-25, the commission generated over $150.4 million to the general fund, over $6.3 million to CalSTRS to benefit our retired teachers, and over $2.2 million to the Lake Tahoe Access Fund to help protect Lake Tahoe. With approximately 210 employees, the total revenue generated by the commission equates to over $716,000 per position. With nearly a $48 million operating budget, the commission clearly punches above its weight. In 2025, the commission approved 194 leases for the use of public lands and resources. We also authorized 67 bond or rent revisions, lease amendments, lease terminations, and other related actions. And those numbers do not include the 107 items on today's agenda that we'll be voting on. This year was also marked by a significant leadership transition. The commission undertook a recruitment process for a new executive officer, following the departure of Jennifer Lou Casey, who dedicated 24 years to the commission, including 12 years as executive officer. Her institutional knowledge and leadership left an enduring mark on this agency. And let me just also recognize that while she left this commission, she did stay within state government on to do other extremely important work for which we are grateful. But during this transition, Acting Executive Officer Grace Cato led the commission with steadiness, professionalism, and an extraordinary level of dedication. Grace worked tirelessly to ensure continuity, maintain momentum, and support both staff and commissioners through a complex period of change. We are extraordinarily fortunate that she has continued in her role as Assistant Executive Officer, and I want to publicly thank her again for her leadership and the leadership she provided during that time and continues to provide to this day. Thank you, Grace. Turning to, let me just note that Dr. Matthew Dumlo helped me to prepare these, and he left out the part that he is now the executive director. And let me just say, since I know Matthew very well, we've worked together for about 7 years. He was in my office before taking on this role. That is pretty typical for Matt, because he is very mission focused all the time, very team focused, very much a leader of his team, but also very clear about his position, his job in supporting the commissioners who are sitting upon here. This is off the cuff, Matthew, because again, you didn't include anything about yourself in my remarks. But really, we have an incredible staff at the State Lands Commission. All of you work together collaboratively, cooperatively, mission first, on some very complicated and often controversial issues that deeply impact the people of the state of California. We have incredible expertise. That is just not an understatement. This is not about platitudes. It is about recognition that in order for democracy to work, you have to have committed, qualified experts working in state government. And we truly have that at State Lands. So to you, Matthew, congratulations, and thank you for taking on the helm, but really to the entire team. It was a difficult time of transition, and we are so fortunate that it was smooth and that we are ended 2025, and we'll go into 2026 strong.
May I say something?
Would you like to wait maybe until I finish my...
No, I want to say it now.
Okay.
I just wanted to say also thank you. The Lieutenant Governor, I was listening to your remarks. I'm thinking, God, she's got a great memory. And I said, she didn't write those. She had a staff person. And I said, but Matt didn't write them because he's not in that role anymore. But thank you for your leadership, for finding Matthew, presenting him with an opportunity and helping with this transition. The transitions, we have seen transitions go poorly. This really wasn't executed very well. And I just wanted to give my compliments to you.
I appreciate you interrupting me for that. Yeah. Commissioner Cohen, you know, again, as I said, part of the reason why I want to give this review is because it is my last time of four times serving as chair. But presumably you are going to be here for a long time.
Okay.
And this is going to be your staff soon. And so, again, we just cannot overstate how important it is in state government that everyone is working together, because it is harder than ever to serve the public during a time of social media and high tempers and, again, complex work. So, I think we're in all agreement. We're just in a good place here at State Lands, and that is wonderful for us all. Okay, so turning very briefly to programmatic accomplishments, our marine invasive species program continued to be a world-leading program. In response to the discovery of golden mussels in the Delta, the Commission responded decisively, approving emergency regulations to strengthen protections against the introduction of marine invasive species. The Commission also advanced important wetlands, estuary, and fisheries restorations efforts across the state. This work included supporting tidal marsh restoration along the Eel River, salmon recovery in the Klamath River estuary, and the authorization of leases to restore wetland and fish habitat in Seal Beach and the Merced River. Another area of work this year involved abandoned vessel removal. This year, the Commission made significant strides to remove abandoned vessels in the Delta. We also authorized the removal of 14 buoys and associated abandoned vessels in Lake Tahoe, improving environmental conditions and public safety in one of the state's most treasured landscapes. Energy issues were also a major focus in 2025. One of the matters that generated significant public interest this year was the extension of the lease for the Ormond Beach Generating Station through the end of next year. To ensure meaningful public participation, the Commission traveled twice to the city of Oxnard for meetings. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, the approval included a $1.5 million contribution to support air quality improvements in the surrounding community, reflecting the Commission's dedication to environmental justice and public health. We also finalized a settlement that resulted in shutting down one of the three remaining operational oil platforms in state waters, Platform Esther. Plugging and abandonment work is moving ahead, and work is expected to be completed by the first quarter of 2026. Just to put a finer point on it, California will soon have only two active oil platforms in state waters. Additionally, we authorized an addendum to the EIR for Rincon Island to include a parcel donated to the state, expanding the scope of remediation efforts. Lastly, in the area of desalinization, the Commission approved a wave-powered seawater desalinization buoy pilot program off the coast of Fort Bragg. This wave-powered design will be the first of its kind in California and will help inform future utility-scale desalinization deployment as we continue to explore innovative approaches to water resilience. As I reflect on this year, I am proud of the Commission's work, the professionalism of our staff, and the seriousness with which my fellow commissioners approach our shared responsibilities. Serving as chair has been a privilege, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to have led the commission during such an active and consequential year, and active, consequential last 7 years. Thank you. The next order of business will
Madam
be
Madam Chair, if I may. We realized that there was an omission in our script here for the first public comment period. So before we move on to consent items, I suggest we move on to public comment.
Yes. Okay. After all of this praise heaped upon ourselves, we realized that there was an omission of that. All right. So with no further ado, we would like to begin public comment. We don't have. Yes, the video is not on. Right. Did I miss that? Okay. All right. Are there any special instructions before we begin, or can I just?
We can just go ahead and begin. Okay. We'll take people who are here in person first, and then move on to people who have signed up to speak virtually.
Very good. May we call the first person who has signed up for public comment?
Yes. Our first speaker is Neil Desai. Following Neil, we have Adam Laverns.
Hello, Neil. Apologies for making you wait. Thank you for coming. There you go.
Here?
Oh, yep. Yeah. Okay, here we go. Good afternoon, Chair Kunalakis and commissioners, and happiest birthdays to you, Commissioner Cohen.
Thank you.
And congratulations to the staff on a wonderful year. My name is Neil Desai, Pacific Region Director for the National Parks Conservation Association. Our coalition committed to keeping you updated on the Cadiz groundwater mining project. So I'm here to share a big update regarding the state of Arizona's decision last month to reject Cadiz. Arizona is in a historic water crisis with its Colorado River allocations plummeting, its aquifers are stressed. Cities and the state are looking for new sources of water. Yet last month, Arizona's Water Infrastructure Finance Authority, it's also known as WIFA, made a striking decision. WIFA reviewed several big water importation projects to finance with the nearly $400 million it has available. WIFA looked at desalination, recycling, aquifer recharge, and when the WIFA board met on November 19th, they advanced all of them except the application to finance and develop the Cadiz project. A year ago, you remarked about Cadiz's lack of transparency and its intentions when it sought a natural gas lease despite it being in the water business. Turns out that Cadiz was seeking to market half of its water supply to Arizona in return for financing. WIFA board member David Beckham was explicit in rejecting Cadiz, stating, and I quote, "That one's over, we're not doing that," unquote. So if a state this desperate for water will not touch your project, it's a serious red flag, but it's also not surprising. Over the past 5 years, Cadiz has posted an average loss of $31 million each year. Pushback to the scheme has come from all areas, including our U.S. senators, California legislators, desert tribes, and the public. And so, like California, Arizona is not willing to gamble with taxpayers' money by lending support to the project. I just wanted to share that update with you to keep you apprised, and I really appreciate this opportunity to keep giving updates. Have a good rest of your meeting, Neil.
Thank you for that
update.
Good to
see you, Neil.
Good afternoon, Adam Leverins. Happy 24th birthday,
thank you.
Commissioner Cohen. And I want to remark, the people that aren't here, the fall colors around here are absolutely stunning. I mean, just put a smile on my face driving to this venue. It's been about 2 years that I've been looking at agendas for these meetings, and I notice on consent today, items 1, 2, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, 11, 14, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, and then I got tired after that. Those are all general recreational use leases, and each of these I've stated, as well as numerous others over the past 2 years, have a term length of 10 years, and most of you know why I'm here. One particular Tidelands permit holder that's managed by one particular trustee currently has a one-year term permit length, and they propose going to 1 month, and that just creates an incredible level of instability for
people. Which are you talking about?
Well, it's an agenda item later, so I'm trying not to cross a line. I'm from Newport Beach, if that helps.
Okay. Are you able to speak on the item later?
Yes, but I'm just making an observation that it would be nice if term lengths were equitable among similar permits. Thank you.
Understood. Thank you very much for that. Next speaker, please.
Our next speaker is Ryan Davis. Following Ryan, we have Samantha McDonald.
Hello. Thank you very much for the chance to speak today. My name is Ryan Davis, and I'm a former active duty service member.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you. I'm also an undergraduate researcher at the University of California, Berkeley. And I am working on a technological peace and conflict resolution strategy that is focused on improving public safety through better early warning, and mitigating global warming losses through the transformation of Earth and space infrastructure. In some of my previous times meeting with the State Lands Commission, we investigated Platform Holly, which is one of the assets that's owned or managed by the state of California. We investigated it for, you know, possibly alternative energy uses, and we've pivoted a little bit as a next step in what we were hoping to proceed with at Holly, as far as what our lab group was interested in doing. And we pivoted to a place of looking at it as a data point for early warning by installing an HD, you know, infrared thermal camera that can watch the coastal area, which is known to be a high fire risk location, as well as installing like a weather node. We feel that it can better serve the research network of California, which ultimately at the end of the day will support better early warning. I'm interested in speaking with the State Lands Commission individually regarding this effort and what our lab group is pursuing at University of California, and I look forward to that opportunity in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Next speaker, please.
Our next speaker is Samantha McDonald. Following Samantha, we have Han Johnson.
Hi. Can you hear me okay on Zoom?
Yes, we can.
Awesome. Thank you, commissioners. I am Samantha McDonald. I'm a liveaboard in Newport Beach. Promise not talking about the agenda. But I do want to mention during the previous SLC meeting I attended, there was a public comment for an agenda item that was limited to 60 seconds, despite only 15 people asking to speak. And that limit was set before knowing how many people were speaking. I fully understand that this is a limited public forum. The commission has full right to limit public comments when reasonable, but I really respectfully urge the commission to consider their time limits before knowing the amount of speakers, especially on items that are potentially life-changing. The difference between 1 minute and 2 minutes, or even God bless 3 minutes, is substantial, and it's all the public has to be heard by commissioners who are often inaccessible otherwise. So thank you.
Thank you for your comment. I will address that we welcome written comments and we do our best to accommodate everyone. Sometimes the agendas are just much, much longer, and we always want to be able to hear from everyone. So, next speaker, please.
Our next speaker is Hans Johnson. Following Hans, we have Eileen Boken.
Hello, commissioners, and happy birthday to Commissioner Cohen. This is Hans Johnson. I'm president of the East Area Progressive Democrats in Los Angeles, the largest Democratic club in the state of California with more than 1,200 members. I'm speaking today in support of our state Democratic Party platform, which prohibits support or an engagement with Cadiz Incorporated, the legendary plunderer of our desert water and ecosystem, and to commend the commission for its action 1 year ago at its December 2024 meeting to stop a natural gas lease that would be misused or possibly reused or traduced for the distribution of water from pumping out the Fenner Basin aquifers or other aquifers in the Mojave Desert. I'm here also to speak up about recent activity by Cadiz to provide a further update to the commission about action not simply in Arizona where they were turned down, but also involving their efforts at makeover and what recent state lobbying reports and federal lobbying reports show about Cadiz's efforts to try to rebrand itself but speak out of both sides of its mouth. At last year's meeting, Commissioner Cohen said she was not willing to gamble with the state's money, and all commissioners expressed concerns about the lack of transparency of practiced by Cadiz. It's worth noting that in the third quarter, an obscure company set up as a shell operation by Cadiz in 2010 has reemerged and hired a lobbyist formerly associated with the Trump administration, the previous Interior Secretary, who now sits on the board of Truth Social. While they claim to be an arm's length distance from the Trump administration, they are in fact in league with the Trump administration. Please take all steps to support our state Democratic Party platform, block any entanglement or involvement with Cadiz, and keep up the good work to protect state lands, our desert water, and parklands.
Thank you very, very much. It's good to hear from you, and I appreciate those comments. Dr. Dumlau.
I think we still have a few more, maybe two more speakers.
Okay. Next speaker, please.
Our next speaker is Eileen Boken. Following Eileen is Captain Maggie Hallahan.
Eileen Boken, Coalition for San Francisco Neighborhoods, this time speaking on behalf of the coalition. Following up on my written submission to the State Lands Commission, to the SF Mayor and to the SF Board of Supervisors. These comments are similar to verbal comments already made to the SF Capital Planning Committee, the SF PUC Commission, the State Ocean Protection Council, the State Coastal Commission, the SF Fire Commission, and the SF Public Works Commission. And verbal comments that will be made to the Seismic Safety Commission of Cal OES. At its November 18th meeting, the coalition unanimously passed a resolution urging the mayor to transfer the Emergency Firefighting Water System, also known as AWAS, from the SF PUC back to the SF Fire Department where it belongs, with design and engineering by the SF Department of Public Works. The momentum for this transfer at this point in time is from some of the following: the statewide insurance crisis, the massive fires in Altadena and Pacific Palisades. The AWAS issue has come full circle. Fire and insurance issues are the same now as they were after the 1906 earthquake. Fires are not the core mission of the SF PUC, but are the core mission of the SF Fire Department. And happy birthday to Controller Cohen. Thank you.
Thank you, Eileen.
Thank you, Eileen. It's good to hear from you.
Yes.
Next speaker, please.
Our next speaker is Captain Maggie Hallahan. Following Captain Maggie, we have Nina Betty. Captain, please go ahead and unmute yourself. They are unmuted on our end. It is, they would need to unmute themselves.
Okay.
We do have other commenters if we wish to circle back.
Okay, Michelle, why don't we move forward and hopefully that speaker will be able to figure out how to unmute so we can hear from
Yes, our next later. Speaker is Nina Beatty. Following Nina, we have Garrett Kitahara.
Good afternoon. This is Nina Beatty from Monterey. Please halt the sonar geophysical surveys in the ocean. The commission's permitting is based on deficient evidence. It doesn't consider the impacts of decibels.
Is that an item on the agenda? I'm Nina? So sorry, Nina.
These are general comments about geophysical surveys. There are a number of them that the commission, this is about that, the general nature of geophysical surveys, okay?
We do have a general geophysical survey item later on our agenda.
Oh, you
We do? Yeah.
Which item
and you
is
are,
it?
Okay, there's...
You are signed up to speak on that item, I believe.
Okay, no, that's on a specific survey permit. This is on general geophysical surveys in general.
Okay.
Okay. The permitting that the commission's been doing is based on deficient evidence. It doesn't consider the impact of decibels, federal limits, resonance, or frequency on biological organisms. These surveys cause ecocide in the ocean environment. Have the commissioners ever experienced a tachodrome? If so, you have felt the power of decibels, frequency, and resonance to impact and vibrate the body. This sonar equipment is millions of times stronger. These are shattering decibel levels comparable to Saturn V rocket levels. 110 decibels is OSHA's limit for 30 minutes of human exposure. 150 decibels can be lethal. Lower decibel levels damage internal organs, rupture membranes, cause embolisms, and cause animals to strand. Sonar geophysical decibel levels are approximately 10 million times lethal levels and 100 billion times OSHA's limit, and they operate for hours. NRDC's lawsuit against the Navy sonar included evidence by scuba diver Jay Murray. I urge you to revoke current permits and investigate this thoroughly and publicly with the independent science. Secondly, please halt the MODIS project. State public trust lands are being used for this. Xerxes Society and other organizations are gluing RF transmitters on the backs of monarch butterflies, the comparable weight of a 22-pound backpack for humans, a very heavy weight the butterflies must fly with. These transmitters are pulsing every 3 seconds with health-damaging microwave radiation known to harm bees and other insects, as well as birds and other biological beings. Please stop this program before more butterflies are harmed. The transmitters were to be activated mid-December, including to install antennas to track butterflies. Please stop this project. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I just want to remind folks that if you have a specific a comment about a specific item on the agenda, we are required to take those comments at the time that the agenda item is being heard. This period of time is for comments not on today's agenda. Thank you. Michelle, do we have any other speakers signed up?
Yes, we do have several more hands raised. Our next speaker is Garrett Kitahara. Following Garrett, we have the phone number ending in 105.
Hi, all. Commission staff. I'm speaking on behalf of a small UC-affiliated research group working with America's Green Corps, connected to an earlier speaker today, Ryan Davis. Our purpose today is not advocacy and not to argue for a predetermined outcome. We are seeking guidance on whether UC-led independent research could evaluate post-decommissioning or partial removal uses of non-operational offshore oil platforms, including Platform Holly and, more recently, Esther, which you talked about today. Strictly within existing regulatory and CEQA frameworks. Specifically, the research question is whether environmental monitoring and data collection systems, such as marine observation, early warning, or climate sensors, could be hosted on any remaining structures after decommissioning requirements are met, or whether full removal is the only viable outcome. No construction, no operational activity, and no bypassing of decommissioning or CEQA is being proposed. Our goal is simply to understand whether independent academic research could inform long-term planning for managing decommissioned offshore infrastructure in the public interest. We appreciate the Commission's service and would welcome any direction on how such research could be appropriately scoped. We heard that there would be a period of public comments at some point in the future, possibly in 2026, where we could talk actively about an agenda item on this topic around the decommissioning of the oil platforms and what is going to be done to determine the future of them. And we would like to be involved with that process whenever that comes about and speak on behalf of or an advocacy for the proposed solution that we have at the UC Berkeley Lab. So thank you so much. Happy birthday to the controller, Cohen, and we really appreciate you for listening today.
Thank you very much. Next speaker, please.
Our next speaker is calling in with the phone number ending in 105. Following this comment will be Leslie Guth.
If that is your telephone number, if you could go ahead and introduce yourself, please, and proceed with your comments.
Hello, my name is Mark Mathewson. I'm a mooring permit holder here in Newport Beach. And I want to say Newport Beach is the only marina harbor in the state of California where it is not only cheaper, but three times cheaper to have your boat tied to a land-based slip than it is to have your boat tied to a mooring can floating in the middle of the harbor. Please strongly consider first bringing land slip rates in line with the rest of the state.
Mark?
Yes.
We anticipate a full discussion on Newport during that item. Do you have comments unrelated to Newport?
No, that was pretty much it.
Okay. It would be more appropriate to speak during that item on that topic. Thank you, Mark.
Okay, will do. All right.
All right, Michelle, next speaker, please.
Our next speaker is Leslie Guth. Following Leslie, we will try Captain Maggie Hallahan again.
Hi, thank you.
Leslie, you are frozen.
I'm speaking at the correct time. I am speaking to an item on the consent. Oh, okay, sorry.
Oh, wait, no, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you, sure. Go ahead. Leslie, I'm sorry, you are breaking up and frozen. If you'd like, you can try turning off your video. Sometimes that helps with the audio coming through.
Hear me?
We can hear you. Maybe turn your video off, and it's more likely your audio will come through. Leslie, I'm sorry, you keep freezing.
Leslie, if you have general public comments, may I suggest joining for the second public comment period? And hopefully the technical issues can be worked out then.
Yeah, if you can hear me now, I did want to speak to an item on the consent calendar, and I think I'm jumping in at the wrong moment. So hopefully
we can hear you. Go ahead.
Oh, so I wanted to speak to an item on the consent calendar. Can I do that now, or do I need to wait till the other?
You have to wait until the consent calendar public comment.
Okay, I will do that. Thank you.
Okay. Madam Chair, I just want to let you know that I need to go. I need to head back down to the city. But Christina Kunkel, my one of my senior deputies, is definitely on the call and will be able to step in my stead, okay?
Okay. Commissioner Cohen? Happy birthday.
Thank you very much.
And we will then bring in
Christina Kunkel.
Christina on Zoom. Is that right?
Correct.
Yes. I will do it. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Good. I just want to wish everyone a wonderful holiday season, and I look forward to working together next year.
Yay. Thank you. We really should take a picture there before we go. Happy birthday. Have a beautiful day. Okay, Michelle, any additional speakers? And if we can also get Christina up on the Zoom so she can hear as well.
Yes, our next speaker is Captain Maggie Hallahan.
Captain, are you able to tune in?
Hello?
Yes,
hello?
We can
hear me?
You. Yes.
Okay, great. Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Captain Maggie Hallahan. I'm a Sea Scout leader, and I sent two slides, and I was wondering if you can see them right now.
Yes, we can.
With the AV group?
Yes, we can see
them. Okay, great. Well, great. So I just want to share with you that we teach in our Sea Scouts throughout the state with the highest respect for the California State Lands Commission and the role that they have played. And this is some of the curriculum that we share with them. And since they're boaters and young boaters, they're also very interested in having access, equal access. So right to your right there is new data points that you could maybe use in your new, when you start meeting metrics for your next five-year plan. This is currently how many people in California have their California state voting card by zip code, normalized by population. And you could go to the next slide. And this is in the San Francisco area or San Francisco Bay. If we take it seriously and work closely with the areas that don't have the lighter blue areas, we could create a whole new generation of youth and people on the water understanding California boating laws and have more access. So I'm looking for more education and understanding that 30 years ago, we had 1.4 million registered boats in California, and now we have roughly about 600,000. So the state, you know, we need to work together with all the different divisions and departments and cities to, you know, really help our youth get on the water. So thank you for all the work you do. And this was published information in November, California Boating and Waterways Commission, and I'm sure they'll be updating it as more and more people get their California boating card. So thank you very much. And again, happy birthday, Commissioner Cohen.
Thank you very much. Michelle, next speaker, please.
We have no hands raised for comment at this time.
Okay, thank you so much. The next order of business will be the adoption of the consent calendar, items 1 to 104. Commissioners, are there any items you would like removed from the consent calendar? Dr. Dumlau, would you indicate which items, if any, have been removed from the consent calendar?
Yes. Consent items 22, 97, 104, and regular item 106 are removed from the agenda and will be considered at a later time. Consent items 64 through 93, this is the entire Sandy Beach section of our agenda, as well as item 99 will be moved to from the consent calendar to the regular agenda. And those items will be heard after we finish the items on our regular agenda. So the last item is 110, and those items will be taken up after that.
Okay, I noticed we don't have public comment worked into this item either. Am I missing that for the consent
calendar? That's true. I'm guessing that maybe Leslie's comments were going to ask us to pull it from the agenda based off of what she had indicated previously. So she will have an opportunity to speak on the item as
but we did just tell her that there would be public item on consent, so should
we could open it up for public comment.
All right. I'd like to call for any public comment on the consent calendar. And, Michelle, if you have anyone signed up to speak.
Yes. Our first speaker will be Leslie Guth.
Okay. Leslie, please proceed, but I assume that you have heard that we have pulled the items related to Sandy Beach for off the consent item as part now of the regular calendar, and we will have discussion on those items.
Waiting. I'm sorry, I'm a little confused about your process.
Please just proceed with your comments on the consent calendar.
Thank you. Thank you, commissioners. My name is Leslie Guth. I live at 8 Sandy Beach. Myself and some of my neighbors respectfully request that the commission consider supporting our legislative proposal to contribute the state lands rental income generated by Sandy Beach.
Leslie, I'm sorry. Yes. We have moved that item off of consent onto the regular agenda. So now we'll be calling that item separately. Can we put you at the top of the list for comments on that item when it comes up, sure. Hopefully very soon.
Of course. Okay. And I'm so sorry I was confused about your process here.
No worries. No worries.
And just to clarify, because this is it is confusing, we are moving it to the regular agenda, and our regular agenda ends with item 110. All of the items that we are moving will happen right after that. So, Leslie, we'll see you after item 110.
Okay. May I have a motion to adopt the consent agenda and a second?
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion by Commissioner Perrault, a second by Commissioner Kunkel. Any objections to unanimous vote?
No.
Motion passes. The next order of business will be the regular calendar. Item 105.
All right, item 105 is a presentation by staff to consider acceptance of the report on the City of Newport Beach's public trust lands management and provide direction to staff on next steps. Jeffrey Plovnik will give the staff presentation, and staff attorney Ben Johnson is also available for questions.
Very good, thank you, and we will have the presentation.
All right. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and Commissioners. I am Jeff Plovnik, Granted Lands Specialist with the Land Management Division, and I'm here to present on item 105. Next slide, please. This item concerns state sovereign lands in Newport Bay that were granted to the City of Newport Beach by the legislature. These lands are shown here through aerial imagery. In response to staff and public concerns and commission direction, staff have been reviewing topics related to the city's mooring and residential pier permit programs since 2024. At the Commission's August 21st meeting, staff presented a draft report on the City of Newport Beach's public trust lands management with analysis, findings, and recommendations about these programs. This draft report was made available for public comment through October 31st, and now, after taking public input into account, staff have prepared a final version of this report. The report is attached as Exhibit A to the staff report for this item. Next slide, please. The legislature originally granted the state's sovereign lands in Newport Bay to the City of Newport Beach in 1919. This grant was amended several times before being repealed and replaced in 1978 by the operative grant, Chapter 74, Statutes of 1978. The operative grant has been modified or amended multiple times since then. As with all grantees, the city is responsible for managing its legislatively granted lands within the guidelines of the public trust doctrine, the California Constitution, its granting statutes, and its fiduciary duties as a trustee of state lands. A few of the most important requirements from the city's grant are shown here. Next slide, please. As mentioned, staff's report is focused on the city's management of moorings and residential piers in Newport Bay. To give you a better idea of what this encompasses, here is an aerial image of the bay with some of the moorings and piers visible. Overall, the city manages 884 residential piers and approximately 1,200 moorings, of which around 800 are classified as offshore moorings capable of accommodating vessels 20 feet to 95 feet in length, with the rest classified as onshore moorings able to accommodate smaller vessels of 18 feet or less. Next slide, please. As a grantee of public trust lands, the city has discretion in determining how it manages its granted lands. However, these lands remain subject to the oversight authority of the state by and through the State Lands Commission, with the commission retaining all authority and jurisdiction remaining to the state for these lands. The commission's residual oversight authority is largely limited to reviewing the city's actions for consistency with the public trust doctrine, the California Constitution, the grant statutes, and its fiduciary duties. Notably, the Commission is not authorized to impose its own discretionary decisions on the city. Such authority is reserved to the legislature through amendments to the grant. Next slide, please. Although the Commission cannot impose its own discretionary decisions on the city, the operative grant does contain specific provisions regarding Commission oversight. For example, per the grant statute, the Commission can recommend grant statute amendments to the legislature and can institute a formal inquiry to determine if the terms and conditions of the grant statute, and any amendments thereto, have been complied with in good faith. The grant also provides the Commission with remedies if the city violates its grant statutes or other provisions of law. For example, in the event of such a violation, the commission is to report to the legislature, which may then direct the Attorney General to bring litigation to revoke the grant or compel compliance. Or similarly, after holding a publicly noticed hearing at which the city has been given an opportunity to defend itself, the commission may formally request the Attorney General to bring litigation against the city to resolve a violation. Next slide, please. As mentioned, staff released the draft report on the City of Newport Beach's public trust lands management for public review and comment in advance of the August 21st, 2025 commission meeting. Taking into account public input, staff has now prepared the final version of this report with minor changes to several sections and the addition of a section discussing residential peer subleasing. Staff has also prepared responses to public comments attached to the staff report for this item as Exhibit D. Staff's report is focused on the city's discretionary actions regarding both mooring permits and residential pier permits, and how these actions were explained, or if they were explained at all, taking into consideration the city's legal obligations as the state's trustee. When the city's actions appear to conflict with its legal obligations to the state, this report identifies the potential legal violations so that the city may review its management, provide responses, and make corrections as needed. There are other topics related to the city's granted lands management that are not discussed in this report or which have not been addressed in a comprehensive manner. The intent of this report is to provide the city with guidance for how it should approach granted lands management issues, even if such issues are not directly or comprehensively addressed by this report. Next slide, please. Staff's findings and recommendations in the final report are substantially the same as in the draft version of this report. For the mooring permit program, staff concluded that the appraisal staff reviewed did not violate generally accepted appraisal principles, and as such, the city can reasonably rely on it to set rates for mooring permits, that the city can pursue programs to address mooring affordability, and that staff would be happy to assist the city in navigating the legal issues involved in implementing such programs, and finally, that the private sale of mooring permits allowed by the city's transfer policy appears to violate the city's grant statutes, fiduciary obligations to the state, and the public trust doctrine. Next slide, please. For the residential pier permit program, staff concluded that residential pier rates appear significantly below market rates, and the city's rental area calculations do not reflect the extent of private use of public tidelands, and that the city should review its residential pier rental rates and how rental areas are calculated. Staff also concluded that the city should investigate residential pier subleasing in Newport Bay, evaluate its existing policies regarding residential pier subleasing, ensure that the Tidelands Fund is being appropriately compensated for residential pier subleasing profits, and explore how to more effectively track and enforce residential pier subleasing restrictions. Next slide, please. As it is the most substantive addition between the draft report and the final report, I would like to elaborate a bit regarding the subleasing of city-managed residential piers. First, staff would like to thank members of the Newport Mooring community for bringing this to staff's attention, as it was not addressed in the draft report, but in response to public comment, staff looked into pier subleasing and this investigation revealed significant concerns. The city's current policy allows residential pier permittees to sublease their piers to third parties. The permittees are required to notify the city that they are subleasing and they are thereafter charged the small commercial marina rate for their pier. Staff's recommendation in the final report is that the existing subleasing policy be evaluated to ensure that the Tidelands Fund is being appropriately compensated for profits made through the subleasing of residential piers. As an example of what the subleasing profits might look like, if we use the average pier area of 1,116 square feet and apply the current small commercial marina rate of 99 cents per square foot, then we get an annual rent of approximately $1,105 for an average-sized subleased pier. In comparison, when staff reviewed a website listing residential piers for sublease in Newport Bay, the sublease listings ranged from $1,250 to $9,000 per month. Even at the low end of that range, subleasing an average-sized pier for 1 month would fully cover a pier permittee's annual rent and net them a profit of around $145. Given the profits that pier owners seem capable of generating through subleasing their piers, the current rates the city charges for subleased piers are almost certainly too low, and this could be an unconstitutional gift of public funds. Next slide, please. Finally, in regards to the city's overall tidelands management, staff concluded that there are clear differences in rate revision approaches for mooring permits and residential piers, with the trend for mooring permit rates having been to use regular appraisals to reflect market conditions, which is generally appropriate, whereas the trend for residential pier permits has been to reduce the overall rent amount through reductions of lease area and the lowering of rates without conducting new or updated appraisals. The decisions related to residential piers appear to be political in nature and may violate both the granting statute and the California Constitution. Moving forward, the city should change this practice and follow consistent valuation methodologies applied either simultaneously or at the same time interval for both mooring permits and residential piers. Staff also concluded that the city should review the action it adopted on July 9, 2024 to ensure this action provides a fair solution that addresses the topics discussed in the report. And finally, that overall, when reviewing the city's actions over the last several decades, it is evident that the city has not adequately explained how its granted lands management decisions, especially in relation to its mooring and residential pier programs, comply with the city's obligations as the state's trustee under the granting statute. Next slide, please. As mentioned, staff provided responses to public comments about the draft report as Exhibit D to the staff report for this item. Staff has provided responses to comment letters received during the comment period as well as master responses that address common topics brought up in the comments. I'll briefly summarize staff's responses to the most common comment topics, which are shown here. Additional details for these responses are available in the staff report and exhibits. Next slide, please. The first common comment topic is that existing and proposed rate differences between mooring buoys and piers reflect discrimination in the city's management of public trust lands. In response, staff would first like to thank the Newport Mooring Association and others for highlighting the issue of the low residential pier rates. Staff agree that the residential pier rates appear to be well below market value and that it is not appropriate for the city to allow residential pier permittees to pay below market rates. Thus, staff's recommendation has been and remains that the city immediately reappraise its pier rates to bring them to fair market levels. However, staff does not agree that the residential pier permits and mooring permits must, as a matter of law, be charged the same rates. Piers and moorings are different uses with different infrastructure, amenities, and potential user markets, and so the approach to appraising fair market value and the rates determined by such appraisals may be different between them without indicating discrimination. Next slide, please. The second common comment topic is that the city's 2023 appraisals should not be used in setting mooring permit rates. In response, staff reviewed the city's December 2023 appraisal and determined that it does not violate generally accepted appraisal principles or methodologies, and relying on it does not violate the grant or any other part of California law. Thus, this appraisal is a reasonable way to determine fair market rates. However, this is not to say that other appraisals that arrive at different rates could not also be reasonable. Nevertheless, it is not the commission's role to mandate which appraisal the city uses.
I'm so sorry, then why do you say here the 2023 appraisal should not be used?
That was the topic, the comment topic.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Not a problem. Thank you for clarifying. Next slide, please. So the next comment topic that we received is that changing the mooring permit program will result in the loss of affordable access to Newport Bay. And staff's response is that staff understands raising mooring permit rates will pose difficulties for some current mooring permittees, and staff is supportive of using a phased approach or other methods that could attenuate the immediate financial impact to current permittees. However, staff does not agree that the current mooring permit program does in fact provide low-cost access to the bay. The current program requires that new permittees purchase a permit on the private transfer market, with a 40-foot mooring permit selling for an average of $40,000 to $60,000. The requirement for a $40,000 upfront payment is a significant financial barrier and precludes a large segment of the general public from obtaining a mooring permit. Thus, for most people, a mooring permit is not affordable. That said, staff is supportive of the city pursuing programs that could address mooring affordability. Staff would be happy to assist the city with navigating the legal issues involved in implementing a subsidized, low-cost mooring program that is consistent with the city's grant and the California Constitution if the city wishes to do so. At a high level, such a program would need to be carefully developed with respect to determining who is eligible for the subsidized rates and the term length for the subsidized permits, and also would need to ensure that the program provides broad public access to the city's public trust lands instead of simply subsidizing rates for a select group of individuals. Next slide, please. The next common comment topic is that mooring permittees do not profit from selling their mooring permits. Staff's response is that in regarding to mooring permit sales, a net profit is not necessary to implicate the concerns contained in the report. Therefore, even if mooring permittees are not making a net profit when selling their permits, this does not mean that they are not profiting from their use of the city's public trust lands. Even simply defraying costs that would otherwise be borne by the permittees represents a subsidized use of publicly owned property for private benefit and supports staff's conclusions in the report. Additionally, based on calculations provided by the city, net profits are often derived from mooring permit sales. The city's analysis indicates that since 2017, sales for which the city has records have resulted in sellers collecting approximately $715,276 in total profit with an average profit margin of 52%. Therefore, whether in net or through defrayed costs, it can be concluded that sellers do profit from mooring permit sales. Next slide, please. And the final common comment topic that I will go over is that the mooring permit transfer fee provides significant compensation to the city's tidelands fund. Staff's response is that ultimately, it does not matter how much revenue the transfer fee might generate. As mentioned, the existing transfer policy appears to violate various provisions of law, and revenue generation does not justify or excuse actions or programs that are legal violations. Additionally, staff does not agree that the permit transfer fee results in significant revenue for the city's tidelands fund. According to city records, in 2024, the city received $72,678 in revenue from mooring permit transfer fees, while $2,536,200 was paid to private parties for mooring permits sold on the private market. The transfer fee revenue received by the city in 2024 was approximately 2.87% of what was paid to private parties for permit transfers and accounts for 0.29% of the city's total Tidelands Fund revenue. In staff's opinion, this does not represent a significant source of revenue to the Tidelands Fund. So that briefly covers the most commonly brought up public comment topics. For those interested, more thorough responses to these topics and many others are available in the staff report and attached exhibits. Next slide, please. For next steps, staff recommends transmitting the final report to the city, after which staff will work with the city as needed to identify and implement responses to issues raised in the report. From conversations with city staff, staff believes the city understands the severity of the issues raised and is working to address them in good faith. Proceeding with staff's recommended approach means that staff can work collaboratively with the city to address these issues. In staff's experience with other grantees, this approach leads to more expedient and less expensive problem solving. The alternative, which would be to proceed directly to litigation, would place the commission in an adversarial role, preclude collaboration, and be very costly. That said, it is also important to ensure that the city truly addresses the issues discussed. Staff also recommends requesting regular updates from the city on how it is addressing the issues raised. This process will also help make any potential future litigation more efficient by clarifying the issues that must be litigated. If the city does not make progress, staff's next step would be to recommend that the commission formally determine the city is in violation of its grant. This would trigger a hearing in front of the commission where the city can defend itself, and if the commission ultimately finds that the city is in violation of its grant, would trigger a referral to the Attorney General's office for litigation. Next slide, please. Therefore, staff recommends that the commission, one, direct staff to transmit the report on the City of Newport Beach's public trust lands management to the city, two, direct staff to coordinate with the city and provide the commission with an update regarding the city's progress in addressing problems identified in the report within 6 months, adjusted as needed for the commission's meeting schedule. Three, delegate authority to the executive officer or their designee to recommend that the commission institute a formal hearing pursuant to Chapter 74, Statutes of 1978, and as amended, if staff determines that the city's progress in addressing its public trust lands management issues has been insufficient within 12 months. And four, delegate authority to the executive officer or their designee to recommend that such a formal hearing be deferred to a later date or indefinitely if the city's progress is sufficient or if staff determines that the city has made a good faith effort to address its public trust lands management issues but needs more time to resolve said issues. Next slide, please. Thank you. That concludes staff's presentation. Staff is available to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you very much for that very thorough report. It's been a long journey to get here. And I think we will start with public comment and then have comments from commissioners. So, Michelle, do we have anyone signed up here in person to provide comment on this item?
I believe our first speaker is actually on Zoom. So if you can go directly to Zoom. Our first speaker is Bill Kinney. Following Bill is Samantha McDonald.
Very good. Bill, would you like to unmute yourself and present your comments?
There we go. I apologize. I am unmuted. My name is Bill Kinney, Chair Kunalakis and members of the California State Lands Commission. We appreciate this opportunity to address you today. I'm representing the Newport Harbor Foundation. The Newport Harbor Foundation was created for the purpose of preserving, protecting, and enhancing Newport Harbor for the benefit of the city of Newport Beach, the homeowners on or near the bay, the commercial operators in the bay, and the recreational users of the bay. The foundation's founders, contributors, and members are made up of individuals and businesses who have a long history of using and enjoying the harbor and a vested interest in its enhancement and preservation for use by current and future generations. The foundation has reviewed the commissioner's staff report and commends them both for the level of detail and the recommendations contained therein. Specifically, with respect to the mooring permit rates, the Newport Harbor Foundation agrees with staff's recommendation that the city should continue to use independent appraisals to determine fair market rent. Regarding residential pier and mooring permit comparison, we concur with staff that different calculation methods may be used to determine rates for moorings and residential piers. Likewise, the foundation concurs with staff's recommendation that the private profiteering resulting from the practice of allowing the sale of mooring permits should cease. With respect to residential pier subleases, we agree with the staff's recommendation that the city should ensure that subleased piers should pay a permit fee commensurate with commercial rates. And finally, we commend the city for creating the mooring license program and are pleased that commission staff concurs. The Newport Harbor Foundation requests that the California State Lands Commission adopt the staff's recommendation on these issues, and we look forward to working with the City of Newport Beach and the California State Lands Commission in the future for the purpose of preserving, protecting, and enhancing Newport Harbor. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Michelle, next speaker, please.
Our next speaker is Samantha McDonald. Following Samantha, we have Che Lee Hickma.
Can I ask you, how many people altogether do we have signed up for this item?
We currently have 10 people signed up for this item, not including Bill, but one of those commenters will be a group. It will be a group presentation.
Okay, very good.
So yes. Within that group, there is, I think like 8.
Okay, very good. Next speaker, please.
Thank you. Hi again, this is Samantha McDonald. This report claims liveaboards are not public trust consistent use, yet provides zero evidence. Without evidence, I can only assume staff is referring to the Redwood City case again, which I demonstrate at the October town hall is wrong and misapplies concerns about houseboats in Redwood City to liveaboards in Newport, where houseboats are banned. Dr. Dumlau, you mentioned in an email to me that these report statements are prevailing views among legal experts, but you didn't identify who those legal experts were or where these ideas came from. Chair, you said in the beginning of this meeting that the committee is committed to transparency, and I don't see it for these liveaboard claims. I recognize that staff is spread thin. They said they didn't want to talk about liveaboards, but they did anyways, and they started making broad statements about liveaboards in the report without evidence, and I think that's irresponsible at best and manipulative at worst. It sends a message that the SLC is greenlighting the ability for Newport to kick people out of their homes if they deem them undesirable. Staff also say in the report that even if liveaboards were public trust consistent, which they are, the city has discretion to choose between competing public trust uses. This makes zero sense to me. The public trust use of a person who lives on her boat and sails the Catalina Island 5 times a year is the same as a person who sails the Catalina Island 5 times a year and lives on land. The city has discretion to choose between different public trust uses. It does not have discretion to eliminate one group of recreational users versus another for doing the exact same activity, especially when there are over 100 empty mooring balls at any given time and a mere 50 or so liveaboard permittees who do not impede on boating recreation for others. Do not accept this report as it stands, and I please ask that if you want to evaluate liveaboards, please remove the claims about liveaboards in this report and request an attorney general opinion specific to liveaboards in Newport Beach, as I outlined in my letter. Please read this letter and take these into account with edits to this report. Thank you.
Next speaker, please, Michelle.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Chaley Hilkema. Following Chaley, we have George Hilkema.
Hello. Hello. Good afternoon, commissioners. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Please proceed.
Okay, thank you. My name is Chaley Hilkema. I'm a Newport Harbor mooring permit holder, and I urge you to not accept the staff report 105. Mooring permit holders have made huge efforts to thoroughly inform this commission about the systemic inequities we've endured for years. Now the city of Newport Beach wants to end mooring transferability again, singling us out because it has always and will always allow the transferability of permits for homeowner docks and permits given to marina owners. It has also approved an outrageous 300 to 500% mooring fee increase, again, just for us, even though residential pier permit holders pay considerably less fees for their docks and nothing for the boats tied to them. I suspect the city's intent is to force us out to further gentrify Newport Harbor and to move forward with some unknown to us future plan for Newport Harbor. The State Lands Commission's mission statement informs us that you will provide the people of the state of California with effective stewardship of the lands, waterways, and resources entrusted to its care based on the principles of equity. It is not my intention to question your integrity. However, since equity means fairness or justice in the way people are treated, I'm having a difficult time reconciling the disparity between my expectation that this commission would stand by its words on behalf of mooring permit holders who have clearly been treated unfairly, and my concern that you've essentially condoned the financial and regulatory discrimination that Newport Beach policymakers have perpetrated and continue to commit against us, while wealthy residential pier permit holders and yacht club members enjoy the luxury of not being the targeted users of Newport Harbor's public tidelands. Please choose to protect and promote low-cost public access in Newport Harbor. Thank you for your work.
Thank you very much. Michelle, next speaker, please.
Our next speaker is George Hilkema. Following George, we have Jim Palmer.
My name is George Hilkema. I've been a mooring permit holder and board member of the Newport Harbor Mooring Association for 35 years. In 2 days, I'll be 90 years old. While I'm generally not one for regrets, I must tell you that I wish I could get back the uncountable hours I've spent addressing the issues of mooring permit fee increases and the threat of mooring permit revocation. If the city of Newport Beach ends mooring permit transferability, it will ruin our ability to recoup some of the money we paid for our permits, and it raises mooring rates to amounts that are unaffordable for most. It will make selling our boat nearly impossible. These are serious threats to our financial security, which may substantially hurt us in our retirement. It is a fact that Newport Beach has biased policies that give financial favor to residential permit holders. It is also a fact that both moorings and private residential piers are self-installed and self-maintained and used as places to park boats. We are like users, but those with private docks pay a fraction of the fees we pay for their docks, and they pay no fees at all for the boats tied to them. Though this commission doesn't set mooring rates, it approved the flawed NETSER appraisal that makes improper comparisons and recommends mooring fees that are far higher than the state CLAN's benchmark and rates paid by users like users in California. I submit that if the equity is truly your mission, it is imperative that a new appraisal by one firm comprehensively and simultaneously addresses residential pier rates and mooring rates. Please do not accept staff report 105. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next speaker, please.
Our next speaker is Jim Palmer. Following Jim, we have Captain Pat Cummins.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Could you call up a video titled Palmer Alternative? I sent in two, anticipating 1 minute. And here's a 1 minute video. If you could play it, please.
Hello, and thank you for what you do. My name is Jim Palmer. I'm a Newport Beach mooring permit holder, but not a city resident. Like 60% of permit holders, I cannot vote locally and rely upon this commission to protect our interest. The staff report rightly notes that the city's granted lands decisions often appear political rather than compliant with its trustee obligations under the granting statute. Yet it is puzzling and contrary to the evidence, that it concludes these political issues are not relevant to mooring permits. Since taking over mooring administration in 2016, the city has pursued incremental mooring permit changes, a decade of relentless paper cuts, if you will, culminating in the gut-punch July 2024 ordinance phasing out mooring permits and converting them into mooring licenses. Accepting this report enables mooring permit ordinance to proceed while allowing the city to continue to delay staff's advised holistic management review indefinitely. I respectfully ask you to reject the report and instead direct the city to suspend all mooring changes until a commission-approved, fully compliant holistic review is completed. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next speaker, please, Michelle.
Our next speaker is Captain Pat Cummins. Following Captain Pat, we have Bud Cummins.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Thank you for your time. Excuse me, I have a cold, but I just needed to say something because it's very important to me. You know, that you're about to make changes that could change my life. I live on my boat in the moorings, on a 50-foot mooring. As Samantha before me has mentioned, all the rules that would protect us, I just wanted to add that we do pay a monthly fee. We do pay an extra live aboard fee, and we maintain the hardware. It's about $1,500 every 2 years. These fees do go up every year with the cost of living. The live aboard went up 11% last year. We also yearly have to reapply for our live aboard permit. We bring the boat to them to pass a 2-page checklist and we show all the paperwork. These aren't junky boats. These are boats that we care for, insure, keep registered. We keep a log for our pump out records that the city will see and check every year. Yeah. Also, worldwide, marinas and moorings like to have live aboards around. Most places that I've been to in marinas, they want at least 10% live aboards in their marinas for safety. They call us the eyes of the harbor. We've all rescued boats from dragging, roll up furlings from our furling. We're the ones out there in 40, 50 knots of wind at night to help a neighboring boat. We're the ones that help people on stand up boards when they're in trouble. Duffy's, anytime you go out, you're saving a Duffy that's out there because they don't need a license or nothing. They get in the boat and go. And they get into a lot of trouble out here. I just want to say, don't get rid of live aboards. They're important. It's an affordable way to keep me to live on my boat, have my boat. The city is allowing people to still purchase these moorings, taking their cut. People are paying $50,000 for these moorings in the hopes of when they sell it, they'll recap some of their money. They plan to keep the boat. People have been out here 20, 30 years, have grandchildren in the area, families in the area. It's a community. To break this up, I just don't understand it. That's it. I got to go to sleep. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Pat. Next speaker, please, Michelle.
Our next speaker is Bud Cummins. Following Bud, we have Lauren Wooding Whitlinger.
Bud? Oh, you're on mute.
How about now?
We can hear you.
Okay, thank you. So thank you for hearing us today. My wife and I are retired, average blue-collar people. Like many enjoying the harbor, for most of us, the moorings offer the last vestige of affordable opportunity to store our boats. And for those of us that live aboard, it's affordable quality living. When I first heard of the almost 500% increase for us, I thought that can't be. When we bought our boat, we were told that it would go up with CPI over the years. We budgeted for that. It's getting harder and harder to just almost live with everything going up 6-7%, let alone 500%. I'm shocked by the difference between us and the homeowners. I'm glad you have recognized that discrimination, but I doubt the city will ever charge an equitable fee compared to the raise they are proposing for the mooring holders. I can't even imagine what the docks would have to be if you compare their lifestyle to ours. At a previous meeting, Chair Kunalakis, I hope I said that right, articulated very well, and I wish I could be as articulate as her, especially on the fly like that. But at the end, she questioned whether fair market value even has to be charged. And I appreciate that consideration. Like the beaches of California, which are free, there could be a fair market value based on other states such as New Jersey, which cost to use the beach. I'm not proposing free moorings, or as nice as that would be, but to keep it reasonable to what it's been all these years, at least the 9 years we've lived here and what we expected the increases to be. And liveaboards have probably existed since boating has existed, although that's anecdotal, it's not something I can prove. Here we have and have to obey strict rules on sewage and tidelands protections that all other boaters seem to consider mere suggestions. Liveaboards are not a problem. Thank you very much for listening. Happy holidays also.
Thank you for your comments, Bud. How many more speakers do we have? I was a little unclear about the group presentation.
Yes, I do apologize. We have two individual speakers. Following that, we have a group presentation, of which there are 8 speakers in that.
And how many minutes are we allocating for the group presentation?
For the group presentation, they're each presenting with one or two slides. So we don't have an estimate on the time limit.
Okay. All right. Very good. All right. Next speaker, please.
Oh, and I do want to say after that group, there will also be one additional speaker, just to clarify. But our next speaker is Lauren Wooding Whitlinger. Following Lauren is Michael B. Spano.
Okay, very good. We have a lot of things left on the agenda today, so let's keep going and try to get through everyone. Lauren, please proceed.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair and members of the Commission. My name is Lauren Wooding Whitlinger. I'm with the City of Newport Beach. Thank you for the opportunity to address you this afternoon regarding the report on the City of Newport Beach's Public Trust Lands Management. The city is committed to updating our mooring and residential pier programs to address the recommendations outlined in the report. The city shares the commission's goal of ensuring the public tide and submerged lands in Newport Harbor are managed in accordance with the California State Constitution, the public trust doctrine, and the city's granting statutes. We appreciate the time and attention the commission and commission staff have put into understanding the city's current programs and providing guidance regarding how the programs can be updated. We look forward to continuing to work with the commission staff, the community, and stakeholders in Newport Harbor to ensure our programs are updated and implemented in a comprehensive, timely, and transparent manner. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next speaker, please.
Our next speaker is Michael B. Spano. Following Michael, we will have a group presentation.
Okay, very good. Michael, if you can hear us, please proceed. Michelle, we can't see if he's there.
Hello, can you hear me now?
We can. Please proceed.
I was raising my hand instead of unmuting myself.
Okay.
My name is Michael Spano. I have a PhD from UC Irvine, and I'm a liveaboard sailor in Newport Beach. This report has uncovered some concerning truths about Newport Beach's management of state tidelands, and I do commend staff for uncovering those. I know that state lands keep saying they don't set the rates. I understand that. I really do. But if you read this investigation, there is clear evidence that you do based on the language you use. For example, you determine quite firmly that it's okay for Newport Beach to collude with an appraiser to increase mooring rents exponentially. Your staff recognizes that the methodology does not apply the 5% rate of return for moorings as the California state lands would, and that is acceptable. But when trying to determine if the piers are being gifted public lands, the staff does use a 5% rate of return, and even so, the pier rent still comes out below that benchmark number. Now, if I were the City of Newport Beach, I will have understood that it is okay to charge one group 100% of an appraised value and perfectly fine to charge another group only 5% of another appraised value. This is the precedent that you're setting in this report, and this problem isn't new. Your commission and staff have known about this for the last 2 decades. You should not approve this report without serious changes to the examples and language. As it currently stands, staff recommendations disproportionately jeopardize the most vulnerable users in the harbor, users like me, while giving a mild slap on the wrist to the wealthiest users in the harbor. I literally stand to lose everything from your decision today, everything that matters to me. I think this report is on the right track, but it is far from being equitable. Another glaring contradiction is staff's refusal to comment on key aspects of discrimination or equitable treatment. Take your pick. For instance, they point out that piers and moorings are not equal users of the harbor. I'm sorry, I hear the beeping. All I have to say is that the yacht clubs are not being addressed. They're being deferred, and that is identical use to my mooring, and staff is just pushing them off. That is not okay for that to happen in this report. Thank you so much for your time. I'm sorry if I got a little heated.
Thank you for your comments. We truly appreciate hearing from you and from everyone who has spoken so far. And now, Michelle, you have several folks together are making a virtual presentation. Is that how
this is going to go? Yes. It is hybrid. There are several people who are in person, but it is a group. If I may introduce Hein Austin, Mike Fleming, Peter Kaz, Jesse Fleming, Jennifer Creston, Anne Marie Stenton, and Adam Laverns.
Okay, and they're all in one place because we cannot see that. Oh, there we go. Okay.
Can you hear me?
Very good. Yes, we can hear you. Please proceed.
Great. Thank you, commissioners. Happy holidays. My name is Hein Austin, and I respectfully request that the commission consider delaying today's vote for two big reasons. Reason number one, there are at least 7 instances in which the State Lands Commission and the Coastal Commission have stated that to achieve equity among tidelands users in Newport Beach, the issues before you should be addressed simultaneously, comprehensively, and at the same time, instead of months and years apart. For example, instance number 7 states, quote, when the city updates the residential pier lease rates, it should also establish a schedule to reappraise the residential pier rates and mooring rates at the same time, end quote. Despite this clear direction, the actions proposed today do not reflect simultaneous or comprehensive treatment. Slide 2, please. Reason number 2, public records show that the city have not complied with the State Lands Commission's guidance to align the timing and the mooring rates and residential pier rates at the same time. An RFP was issued in March 2025, and 4 bids were submitted by April 1, each identifying appraisal timelines ranging from 28 to 75 days. In addition, a purchase order and related invoice connected to these efforts are already several months old. These records demonstrate that the valuation could have been completed concurrently, fully consistent with the Commission's stated expectations. For these reasons, I respectfully ask that the Commission keep its word and ensure that the valuations be addressed simultaneously and comprehensively. This is a fundamental need to fairness and consistency and transparency for the people of California. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. And then our next speaker is also there. Is that correct? Or Michelle?
Sorry. Our next speaker is Mike Fleming. Following Mike will be Peter Kaz.
Okay. Mike?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
We can. Please proceed.
Okay. I guess we've heard this story again and again and again about the unequitable way that the waters are being managed. And just the fact that the houses are stacked so close together, there's huge areas of the harbor where you have no access whatsoever. And they're not even paying for that access. Not like we're paying. It just seems almost insulting to value something so primitive as a mooring compared to a dock with a barbecue and a picnic table and the awning, et cetera, and access right to your home. I find it hard to believe that if you can't set the exact prices, that you would consider a ratio of 2 to 3 to 1 for a dock in front of a $1 million home compared to what we have to do in the rain to get out to our mooring. And I just can't imagine that it would be so upside down that a mooring would be costing more than a home, a dock in front of a home. And that's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Peter Kaz.
Good afternoon, Madam Commissioners. Slide 6, please. I just want to show you on the slide what happens when we say we're going to save money for mooring people, mooring community, when we get rid of the mooring permits. A staff says a $40,000 upfront payment is a significant financial barrier, but a staff fails to recognize the simple economic cost over time. In 10 years, a residential dock pays about 7 years in green. One specific mooring, about 46 in orange, because they have the mooring permit right now and the boat cost. A city mooring license with no boat pays $72,000. It's in green, it's in the red one. So the whole thing is to help us, the mooring community, to save money. But we don't look at the 10 years, what happens. Anyone can see that to pay far more for something over time is not a wisest choice. The average cost of a new car is now over 50K. Housing costs in Orange County are outrageous, yet through planning, saving, and borrowing less, affluent people manage, just like me, I manage to obtain a mooring permit. A staff implementation that people like us cannot save to acquire a mooring permit is inaccurate and narrow-minded. Next slide, please. The city-owned local coastal program calls to continue to provide mooring as a low-cost option. Please reject the report as it's written and direct staff to enforce the granting and statutes to rewrite in a way that uphold the local coastal program and ensure fair outcomes in Newport Harbor. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Our next speaker is... My apologies.
Next speaker, Michelle.
Our next speaker is Jesse Fleming.
Hi, yes, I have slide number 11. Thank you for listening to me. I'm a liveaboard in Newport Beach. Slide number 11, please. You were right the first time.
Okay.
Great. There we go. Your staff report recommends to end the transfer program for moorings only. Meanwhile, a multi-million dollar waterfront home will retain permits for their pier, which they pay little or nothing for. The mooring transfer program has successfully provided lower cost access to the harbor for generations. We have been here since the 1980s. Ending it would place an undue burden on working class boaters who will not be able to recoup their deposit. As I repeat, deposit, I just heard your staff say that buying a mooring for $40,000 is not low cost. Where can you get a house for $50,000? If we were to have a slip in Newport Beach, it would cost us $5,000 a month, $60,000 a year. We can purchase a 50-foot mooring for $50,000 and then pay our monthly fees as we've been doing all along. This is a way of living. For us, very low cost, and it's been going on for generations to help people to have a place to live. So it would be undue burden for all of us. If the city wants to own the moorings, they could go with their 2022, as you see in this report here, and they could plan to legally acquire these moorings by purchasing them back from the members of the public as they become available. This would be far more equitable an outcome for the mooring holders than just having our legally acquired permits taken away from us. However, if the state land staff does not make this recommendation, then Newport Beach will highly unlikely do it on their own. I'm asking you, please, please do not accept the report as it is written. I beg you to direct your staff to revise this report and make it fair for all of us. The city had a plan in 2022. That would work. I'm trying to give you options here that we can make it fair for us all. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next speaker as part of this presentation.
Our next speaker is Jennifer Creston.
Jennifer, please proceed. Oh, you're here. Hello, Jennifer. Please approach the podium.
Yes. Okay. I think it's on, is it?
It's on.
Oh, no, it's not. Now okay. It is. Now it okay. Is. Okay. Hi, my name is Jennifer Creston, and thank you very much for being here today to listen to us. I'm a sailor in Newport Beach, and I had a slide, not my slide nine, there it is, at shown at previous meetings. The city of Newport Beach knowingly and willingly went against state lands practice in 2015 by gifting boats or berthing spaces to Newport's residential tide lands users, among them local policy and decision makers. And the following was a quote from the city of Newport Beach at that time, quote, as to whether the SLC will deem our actions, especially related to water in the U part of the mooring, of the dock rather, the Tidelands Trust, that is unknown, close quote. Next slide, please, slide 10. Okay, there's the U-shaped mooring on the right-hand picture. Figures from that 2015 city staff report show a reduction of the impacted tidelands area that boats at the docks that the boats the docks occupied created a loss of $1.79 million over the past 10 years, and that issue has not yet been addressed. And add to that an additional dollar value loss associated with the city's lax and non-existent enforcement of residential pier sublet rate. Residential piers are supposed to pay the slightly higher small commercial marina rate. We're talking about paying 99 cents per square foot over 58 cents, yet only about 20 self-report the subletting of their docks. It's common knowledge that there are far more. Here are a couple of websites from that aid in subletting docks. One was $7,500 a month, another was $90,000 a year. And that appraisal that we were talking about was awarded before the RFP was sent out, by the way. Our ask is this: please direct staff to review this report with an equity lens and make recommendations that will level the playing field instead of coming down on ordinary boaters who just want to be able to continue boating in Newport Harbor. And look back into sharing this with the Sheriff's Department. We used to do a really good job of maintaining the harbor. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Michelle?
Our next speaker is Anne Marie Stenton.
Okay, she appears to be here also. Anne Marie?
Thank you so much, commissioners and staff, for the opportunity to speak today. I do want to thank the commission and staff for their time and effort on this report. It will have a significant impact on the 1,200 mooring permittees and their families' access to the California coast. Page 21 of the report discusses how the city appears to have treated its residential pier lessees, who are necessarily city residents, more favorably than its mooring permit holders. This disparate treatment risks violating its fiduciary duties to the state. While docks and moorings are not identical, I think we can all agree on that, we strongly disagree that these two tidelands permits are not equivalent uses. In this case, they're both self-installed, self-maintained, and serve to berth a boat over the same waters. The only difference is, one, the moorings can be accessible to anyone, even non-residents. The other requires the person to be wealthy enough to own a multi-million dollar waterfront property in Newport Beach. Right now, only mooring permit holders are being targeted for loss of rights and significantly increased rates, while others with deeper pockets will retain permits with transfer rights, favorable rates, and long-term leases. We don't feel this is neutral trust administration. This report is written, while it does a lot, I think, to identify concerns, unfortunately, it needs a little bit more work. It will further the disparate treatment mooring holders have already received if it continues as it is. We ask this commission to recognize that there is clear and existing rate discrimination and to please use your power and authority to uphold the right for ordinary Californians to continue to have affordable access to the coast in Newport Harbor. Please require the city to address rates for pier holders and mooring holders simultaneously, as has been recommended by many state commissions. We respectfully ask the commission for a few things today. Next slide, please. Thank you. Please do not accept the report in its current form. Please direct staff to revise recommendations to include clear language that the trustee must address rate and transfer inequities across all Thailand's users simultaneously. And please remain neutral on transferability until these uniform, non-discriminatory policies exist. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Did you guys get this ever?
We have that, okay. Yes. Thank you. Michelle?
Our next speaker is Adam Laverns.
He is right
after
here.
This group, we do have two more speakers just for clarification.
Okay.
Good
very
afternoon
good.
Again.
Thank you.
Jeff got up here and said that the appraisal that staff reviewed did not violate generally accepted accounting principles. We're not talking about generally acceptable accounting principles. We're talking about corruption of the process at the local level. The appraiser, in a previous appraisal, had said that the slip to mooring ratio for setting mooring rates is unreliable. In July of 2020, Harbor Commissioner Scott Cunningham sent out an email saying, I've had two long conversations with Jim regarding the 2016 mooring appraisal. The net-net is when we are ready and funded, the appraisal results will look much different than the 2016 numbers. He sent that email more than 8 months before the RFP was even issued. Next slide, please. In response to that RFP, four appraisers submitted bids. The bid was not awarded until August 3rd, so over a year after Harbor Commissioner Cunningham's email. How did the Harbor Commissioner know more than a year in advance which of four appraisers would be selected and that the appraisal would look much different? That's a problem. That's corruption. The appraiser also, during the same month the appraisal kickoff started, had received from the city a decades-long free ground lease where he sits on the board and the Harbor Master's brother sits on the board. The Harbor Master entered into an agreement in 2022 to not participate in anything related to the use or financial arrangements related to moorings because he himself owns a mooring permit and a yacht club field. At that time, the yacht clubs were to be exempted. The city wasn't going to impose any extra expense or conditions on them. And the Harbor Master, there's emails obtained through public records requests where he's driving up the appraisal prices, telling him to, well, price a 25-foot mooring at a 30-foot rate, price an 18-foot mooring at a 20-foot rate. This is clearly wrong, and I don't think state lands should endorse that level of corruption by a trustee. And then I am available for questions. Thank you.
Michelle, that's the end of this presentation. Is that right?
Yes, from our understanding, that is correct.
Okay, so let's proceed with...
We do have... two more comments, one yep. of which is the chair of Harbor Commission for the City of Newport Beach.
All right. Why don't we take him or her last, and then because there might be a response to some of these comments. Can we do that if they agree?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Our next speaker is the commenter with phone number ending in 105.
If your phone number ends in 105, you can unmute yourself and make your comment now. Please identify
Hello,
yourself.
Thank you. Hello, I'm Mark Mathewson. I'm a Newport Beach mooring permit holder.
Very good.
Thank you for taking the time to listen. Thank you for taking the time to listen to members of the public that will be directly affected by the rule and rate changes that are being proposed. The main reason I'm speaking today is based on draft report 66. There's one paragraph on page 32 of your 35-page report where staff clearly states that the current mooring permit holders stand to lose the money we have spent to obtain our permits by no fault of our own, but by simply following the rules which are already in place. Page 32 reads as follows, quote, the city should end its program of allowing private mooring permit sales. Many current mooring permit holders purchase their moorings with the expectation that they would have the option to sell them in the future to recoup the purchase cost. The city could consider ways to phase out transfers which recognize that the current mooring permit holders were only following the city's established rules when they purchased their moorings. Commission staff is not taking a position on whether compensation should be provided to the current mooring permit holders, end quote. Staff correctly recognizes the fact that we as mooring permit holders stand to lose the many thousands of dollars we have spent to obtain a mooring permit, but by no fault of our own. Staff also recognizes that we were just following the rules which were already in place. Seeing that commission staff is the main driving force behind changing the current system from permits to licenses, I am imploring staff to take a firm and loud position that current permit holders should not stand to lose the thousands of dollars we have all spent while simply following the rules which have been in place for decades. We need you to take the position that we should be compensated for our initial buy-in, especially being aware that the new rule changes will effectively eliminate any chance to recoup that same money in the future. Thank you for your time and happy holidays.
Thank you very much. Michelle, final speaker, please.
Yes, we have no other hands raised for comment at this time. So our last speaker will be Ira Beer, Chair of Harbor Commission for the City of Newport Beach.
Welcome, Commissioner Beer.
Thank you, and good afternoon, Lieutenant Governor and Commissioners. I do serve as Chair of the Newport Beach Harbor Commission. For the past 8 years, I have been directly involved in the city's mooring permit and city licensing programs, including chairing subcommittees, stakeholder meetings, working closely with city staff, and making formal recommendations to our city council. From a public trust perspective, the core issue is straightforward. When a public tidelands mooring permit becomes privately transferable, it stops functioning as a public access program and instead operates as a private asset. In Newport Harbor, that structure has created a private market that restricts access and diverts value away from the public. The claim of low-cost access does not reflect real-world conditions in Newport Harbor. Even where annual rates appear lower, new entrants are required to buy their way in through private transactions. Staff notes that a 40-foot mooring permit commonly sells for $40,000 to $60,000, creating a significant barrier to public access. Meanwhile, the public receives very little of that private transaction value. The city transfer fee is $1,260 for a 40-foot mooring, while private parties received over $2.5 million from mooring permit sales in 2024. The city received less than 3% of what was paid to private sellers at a time when the Tidelands Fund operated at about a $4.3 million deficit. Today, there are roughly 1,000 private mooring permit holders controlling access to public tidelands, while only 17 city-controlled mooring licenses are available, and there are 80 people remaining on a waiting list unless they can afford to buy access from private parties. This disparity demonstrates, a few more seconds, please.
Okay.
Why private transferability of city mooring permits undermines proper public trust administration and requires reform. This same principle does apply to residential piers. Staff's report raises those concerns. Residential pier rates appear below market. Rental area calculations do not fully reflect private use of public tidelands, and so on. I want to respectfully acknowledge that groups such as the Newport Mooring Association are advocating on behalf of existing mooring permit holders and their private interests. That advocacy is expected. However, the commission's duty is to the statewide public interests and to the integrity of public trust lands. This is not about punishing current users. It's about restoring fairness, transparency, and broad public access while ensuring the Tidelands Fund is appropriately compensated. So for those reasons, I strongly support your staff's recommendation, and I urge the commission to authorize staff to work with the city of Newport Beach and implement the proposed reforms in Tidelands. Doing so will help realign Newport Harbor's programs with public trust principles and ensure this remarkable public resource remains accessible to all. Thank you so much for your time and consideration.
Thank you very much, Commissioner, for making the effort to be here and for your comments. Do we have, Michelle, anyone else who would like to address the commission on this item?
No, we have no hands raised for comment at this time.
Okay. I suspect the other commissioners might have comments, so I would like to go first. Let me just start by thanking everyone who came to provide comments, but more importantly, thanking all the members of the Newport community for their engagement over the last 2 years. The comments that we have received along the way have brought to light some very real and serious issues facing Tidelands users in Newport. We now can see clearly that the rates being charged for the piers is too low. And the staff report highlights the deficiencies and how the peer program is managed. I also want to recognize that, first and foremost, what this staff recommendation will do is help to have a new system that will allow for the fair management of these programs. And what we are asking the city is to bring up the rate in particular, to look at those rates for the peers and bring those up to market value. But what the report also highlights is the legal and fiduciary challenges that we've struggled with when we analyze the requests submitted regarding the mooring program. There are also some real challenges here. And when it comes to the transfers and the mooring rates, there are challenges that limit our ability certainly to do what has been requested of us by so many of the speakers, including those here today. So we hear you that the increase in rates for the moorings is going to create some real challenges for some. And I'd just like to say, on a personal note, as someone who was born and raised in the state of California and has spent more than my fair share enjoying the waterways of the Delta and the Sacramento River, and more than my fair share of time out on the San Francisco Bay, that you should not have to be a person of great means in order to be able to spend time on boats in California. We have a 550-foot long coastline as a crow flies. There is plenty of room. And when I am reminded of this every time I get on an airplane and look down, it especially bothers me that the rates for moorings in a place like Newport Beach are driven by supply constraints and by demand for too few moorings. That is not the same as charging rates that are based on impacts rather than just a lack of supply that drives up these prices. So as we have said now multiple times, it is for the city to take our report and to address the concerns that we've raised and come up with a plan that we will continue to participate in as they finalize it. But what is my hope, because truly this is the beginning of the next phase of this process, is that anyone, in particular anyone who is currently living on a boat on one of these moorings, who does not have the financial means to pay the increased rates, that you prioritize those folks to ensure that no one is going to have to lose their livelihood as a result of these changes. And I would like to implore our staff to again recognize that very often it's supply constraint or demand that is driving value and not impacts. And therefore, we should be very careful about increasing rates on all of these things, purely, piers as well as moorings, purely based on the appraised value alone. And to the degree that we are bound legally, we should have robust programs to make sure that there is no one, certainly not those who have, as we've heard, for many years occupied these locations, would as a result lose their ability to continue to enjoy these moorings and piers. So that is my comment, and I will move to adopt the report when the time comes. But first, commissioners, do we have other comments? Commissioner Pearl.
I'll be brief, but I do want to just echo the comments from the Lieutenant Governor as it relates to, well, one, appreciate, as always, the individuals coming forward and taking your time to let us know how some of these recommendations and some of the work that has been going on with the city has been impacting you personally, and do want to just appreciate that. I again, thank staff. I know this has been a long journey, and staff, I think, has been very, very thoughtful in how we are trying to approach, you know, what is within state lands, what's within our decision-making power to do. And I do want to just, again, underscore, I guess, two things. One, that staff, you know, keep very close with the city through this process. As the Lieutenant Governor says, this is in some ways the beginning of the process for actual action based on some of the pieces that are included in this report. So just making sure that, again, you know, as staff does, but keeping very close with the city as they start to walk this journey of how to implement some of these recommendations, with obviously frequent updates to us. And then also just want to, again, reiterate, I think, the importance, again, the Lieutenant Governor's comments around, you know, figuring out a way that we have the least impact on individuals who are on moorings, who are living in their vessels, that they can continue to do so. I know in the presentation it was mentioned a recommendation for an implementation of some sort of a you know, a low-cost program, and I know that wasn't the exact words, but essentially something that would allow for equitable access. And I think that is, again, a very important key point to not just the report, but to the next steps that need to be taken by the city. So again, appreciate the time and appreciate everybody's taking time to come and speak with us.
Commissioner Conkle, do you have any comments or questions?
Yes, thank you, Chair. First, really just aligning myself and the controller on behalf of the controller with the comments of my fellow commissioners, and thanking the Newport mooring holders for showing up again and again. And we all agree with you that it's unfair. It's disappointing that the mooring rates were increased without consideration of an increase to pier rates. I want to elevate what Lieutenant Governor was saying about the rates based on impacts. I have spent time in the Newport Bay renting boats. And I think it was Mike's slide that really dug it in for me. Having a residential pier there is permanently blocking access to the coast, as opposed to moorings, which when I got out on the water, you just have to navigate around them. It's really, when we talk about public access and protecting public access for the people of California, the most important part is just accessing it in the first place, just getting there. And when we have residential piers that are blocking that access, I think that needs to be accounted for when we calculate these rates. So I think that the staff report does a great job of summarizing the inequities, and we're ready to accept the submission of this report to the city. I do have a question. I'm curious. So I understand the timeline is we're giving them 6 months to respond to this, but this has been going on for 2 years. Is there a way, Director Dumlau, Dr. Dumlau, that we can get a response from the city at an earlier date? Just because we're hearing from the public, we're hearing from these mooring holders that there's all this uncertainty around what is going to happen. I just can't imagine that we'd have to wait 6 months or maybe even 12 months to get a response from the city. And we know, like, the city's been hearing this for the past 2 years. They've had time to start thinking about their response.
Yeah.
Can we reduce that timeline?
That's a very good question, Commissioner Kunkel. You know, I think when we were looking ahead at the timeline, we wanted to make sure there was enough time for comment and engagement between the commission and the city. And so we had thought that 6 months would be a decent amount of time to do that. I think we can certainly push for a faster response. I think that would be appropriate. And, you know, I think I imagine the city has been thinking about this stuff for a very long time, and they're not reading this report fresh today. So I think right. We could probably expedite this process.
What do you think is fair? I mean, my first thought is 3 months.
I tell you, yeah. I think that we just have to recognize that cities and commissions, people have a lot on their plate right now. So I think staff recommendation is fine with me, but these conversations are ongoing and they should be as transparent as possible.
And one thing we can do is provide updates in the executive officer report at each of our subsequent meetings between now and sort of the 6 month window that we had established. So, you know, we can provide updates to the commission and the public at our next meeting, which is February. We have another meeting in April. So we can again provide some more comments then. So that is one other alternative approach. And we can continue to push them to provide a response faster. You know, 6 months doesn't mean that they have to submit things by by that date or, on that date. It can be done before.
Yeah, I guess we can just say on the record here that Controller Cohen expects a response much earlier than the 6 month date.
Okay, understood. That's great.
Okay. I would like to move that we adopt staff's recommendation. May I have a second?
Second.
Moved by myself, Chair Kunalakis, seconded by Commissioner Perrault. Any objections to a unanimous vote? Okay, motion passes unanimously. Thank you. Okay. Are we okay continuing, Dr. Dumlau? Do you need a break?
That's fine.
I'm okay.
Up to you.
I'm
fine,
all right.
Fine with me.
Okay, very good. Item 107 is to consider adopting a resolution to oppose a November 20th, 2025 Department of the Interior order titled Unleashing American Offshore Energy that directs the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management to develop a national outer continental shelf oil and gas leasing program that opens federal waters off the coast of California and elsewhere to new offshore oil and gas development. May we have the staff presentation, please?
Yes, thank you, Chair Kunalakis and commissioners. Item 107 is before you today for consideration and recommends that the commission adopt a resolution opposing a November 20th, 2025 Department of the Interior order entitled Unleashing America's Offshore Energy. This order directs the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management to develop a new national outer continental shelf oil and gas leasing program that would open federal waters, including areas off the entire coast of California, to new offshore oil and gas leasing. The 11th National Outer Continental Oil and Gas Leasing Program specifically proposes 34 potential lease sales in federal waters, including six areas spanning the entire California coast, and additional areas offshore Alaska and the Gulf of Mexico. For decades, the Commission and the state have taken a clear and consistent stance against new offshore oil and gas leasing in federal waters off the California coast, including past resolutions opposing similar federal actions and resolutions supporting federal actions to close the offshore area to new oil and gas development. California's longstanding policies on offshore oil and gas reflect the understanding that further expansion of offshore leasing is incompatible with the state's environmental, economic, and climate goals, including its commitment to advancing clean, renewable energy and reducing dependence on fossil fuels. There are also well-documented environmental and economic risks associated with offshore oil and gas development. Historic spills like the 1969 Santa Barbara oil spill and the 2010 Deepwater Horizon disaster demonstrate the catastrophic harm offshore drilling can inflict on marine ecosystems, coastal communities, and economic sectors critical to California and the nation, like tourism, navigation, and fishing. In recognition of these risks and consistent with the state's past actions, California has enacted legislation like the California Coastal Sanctuary Act that bans new offshore oil and gas development in state waters and underscores the state's commitment to protecting its coastal environment. So given that, staff's recommendation today is that the commission adopt a resolution opposing the new oil and gas. I just realized I forgot to do the PowerPoint. I'm so sorry. Well, never mind that. Staff's recommendation is that the commission adopt the resolution opposing new offshore oil and gas off of the California coast and work with the governor's office and the Natural Resources Agency on a joint comment letter to memorialize its opposition and do that by the January 23rd, 24th deadline for comments.
Thank you very much, Sherry. I know we'll probably have some commissioner comments here, but first, Michelle, do we have any public comments for item 107?
Apologies for the delay. One moment, please. After checking our records, we have no hands raised for comment on this item.
Okay. Well, let me just, since this is on our agenda and there may be members of the public who are watching, just to really in the strongest possible terms, condemn the federal government's interest in expanding offshore oil drilling off the coast of the state of California. We have very strong legislation and statements over the course of decades, mostly or largely beyond political party lines, recognizing that the legacy offshore drilling off the state of California winding down and phasing out is in the best interest of our state. By and large, the legacy offshore drilling and the location where I think they are primarily targeting are areas that have enormous amounts of other types of activity. We can talk about the underwater sanctuaries with very valuable environmental resources. We can talk about the fisheries and the fishing operations off the coast. We can also recognize the shipping lanes that go in and out of Southern California, bringing, as we saw once, the potential for anchor drags that disrupt underwater infrastructure. And then finally, the fact that about one out of five of the jobs in the state of California come from tourism and trade. So I mentioned shipping lines, but the natural resources of Southern California for the purpose of tourism are immeasurable to our state. All of this hangs in the balance when we think about the possibility of oil spills off of the California coast. And, you know, for some, the images of wildlife being covered in crude sludge is going to be the issue that is most deeply disturbing to them of the Trump administration's efforts to expand offshore drilling. But for others, it's more complicated than that. It is all the other types of commercial activity that happens that could be disrupted by the fact that, you know, the Los Angeles County and adjacent areas up to Santa Barbara are very highly trafficked, a location of a very dense population. This is a terrible place to begin to have major offshore drilling operations. We can't afford it from an economic perspective, and we certainly cannot afford the possibility of another devastation to our environment after, let me add, the people of the state of California investing so much in the preservation of the sensitive habitat along the coast in Southern California. So, yes, I strongly support this item. It is important for us to raise our voices loud and clear about our concerns and to push back. And let me just also say my understanding of public opinion on this item is that it is strongly behind the leadership of the state of California that is working and investing in the phasing out of offshore drilling and strongly opposed to seeing the Trump administration open up new areas for this purpose. Commissioner Kunkel, I'll turn to you. Do you have questions or comments?
Sure, not much after all that, Lieutenant Governor. Just echoing what you already said, and especially just from the controller's perspective, we can't afford it. We can't afford it. And not only that, the California Sanctuary Act of 94 actually doesn't allow it in state right. water for any additional infrastructure that would connect these potential offshore oil operations in federal waters. So I'm That's glad that we're doing point. This and happy to make this motion when the time's right.
Commissioner Perrault?
I'm not sure I need to follow up to either of your comments. I'll just go ahead and say ditto. I mean, I think this is, again, an important statement that needs to be continue to be made, unfortunately. And obviously, this is something that the administration feels very strongly about, rightfully so, and continue to advocate. So, again, I won't reiterate, but I'll just, again, would support everything that's already been stated.
All right. Do we have a motion?
Yes, I'll make the motion.
Second?
Second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Kunkel and a second from Commissioner Perrault. No objections to a unanimous vote? Seeing none, motion passes unanimously. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, should we move on to item 108?
Yes.
Okay, there's no item, PowerPoint.
Item, had, so thank you. Good. Moving on to item 108 is to consider sponsoring legislation that would grant in trust to the City and County of San Francisco, acting by and through the San Francisco Port Commission, certain public trust easement lands acquired and held by the State Lands Commission. May we have the staff presentation?
Yes, thank you, Chair Kunalakis and Commissioners. As the Chair stated, this proposed legislation would be the Commission authorizing staff to pursue legislation to grant certain public trust easement lands to the San Francisco Port Commission. In October 2022, the Commission approved a title settlement and land exchange agreement involving lands adjacent to Islay Creek in San Francisco. As part of that agreement, the Commission acquired an 18-foot-wide public trust easement along the creek. The settlement requires the Commission and the Port to seek legislative approval to transfer these easement lands to the Port for local management. And in the context of the public trust doctrine, as we all know, the state holds certain sovereign lands in trust for all Californians for uses such as navigation, commerce, fisheries, and recreation. And while these lands cannot be sold into private ownership, the legislature may grant trust lands to local governments to manage on behalf of the statewide public. So this proposed legislation would grant the 18-foot-wide public trust easement lands in trust to the City and County of San Francisco, consistent with the agreement the Commission and the Port and the County approved in 2022, and then place the easement under the management of the San Francisco Port Commission and integrate those lands into the Port's existing portfolio of legislatively granted lands. So this satisfies a key requirement of the 2022 land exchange and supports consistent local management of the lands adjacent to Islay Creek and ensures that they're managed for public trust purposes. And that concludes my presentation.
Very good. Thank you so much. Do we have any public comments for item 108?
Yes. Our first speaker is James Hurley.
James, please unmute yourself and proceed.
Yes, good afternoon. Commissioners, Director Dumau and staff, my name is James Hurley. I'm speaking in support of this item. I am a project manager with the Real Estate and Development Division at the Port of San Francisco, and I had the privilege of working closely with a number of folks on your staff and coming up with a workable solution to what was essentially a title dispute, but one that carried a fair amount of litigation risk to the parties. This ended up being quite a lengthy, complex, and in some ways sensitive negotiation between State Lands Commission, Port of San Francisco, and a private party, private interests. And I believe that the settlement that was reached, which included both a trust exchange and a title settlement, as referenced by Ms. Pemberton, was viewed in a positive light by all parties. So while it was a long and sometimes difficult process, it was very collaborative and ultimately very successful. I want to thank your staff for their patience, diligence, and thoughtfulness throughout the process. In particular, I'd like to acknowledge Sherry Pemberton and Andrew Kirshen for their leadership and collaboration. On behalf of the Port of San Francisco, I ask that you support the proposed implementing legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. Michelle, do we have any other comments?
We have no hands raised for comment at this time.
Commissioners, do you have any comments or questions? May I have a motion? Oh, we're going to need to do a roll call. So I will go ahead and move. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
We have a motion by myself, Commissioner Kunalakis, and a second by Commissioner Kunkel. Let's go ahead and do a roll call vote. Dr. Dumoulin?
Commissioner Peralt?
Abstain.
Commissioner Kunkel?
Aye.
Chair Kunalakis?
Aye.
The vote is 2-0 with one abstention.
All right. And just as a note for the record, when it includes legislation, Commissioner Peralt is usually required to abstain. Okay. So that passed. Yeah, I did the whole thing.
That passed.
Okay, got it. Item 109 relates to an assignment of four leases for the use of existing offshore oil and gas pipelines associated with the Santa Ynez unit offshore Santa Barbara County. There will be no staff presentation or action to be taken for this item, but we will hear public comments. Michelle, do we have any public comments for item 109?
We have no hands raised for comment on 109.
Commissioners, do you have any comments or questions? This item is informational. No vote will be required. Item 110 relates to applications for issuance of offshore sand mining leases known as the San Francisco Bay and Delta Sand Mining Project, located in San Francisco Bay, County of San Francisco. There will be no staff presentation or action to be taken for this item, but we will hear public comments. Michelle, do we have any public comments for item 110?
We have no hands raised for comment on item 110.
Commissioners, do you have any comments or questions? This item is informational, no vote required. Dr. Dumoulin, what is the next order of business?
Yes, we have the items now that we pulled off of the consent agenda and moved to the regular agenda. So we will begin with the Sandy Beach items. Those are items 64 through 93, and we will take it as one presentation to make sure that we approach this item as a collective unit, since they are all properties in the same location.
Very good. We'll start with public comment.
We'll do the presentation
first. Maybe have the presentation, please.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, commissioners, fellow staff, members of the public. My name is Vicki Caldwell. I'm a public land manager in the Land Management Division. I'm here to present information on items 64 through 93. These are revisions of rent for Sandy Beach. The next slide. The Sandy Beach community is located in unincorporated Solano County near the city of Vallejo, west of Interstate 80 and east of Mare Island. On April 1st, 1868, the state issued patents for Tideland Survey number 10 and 11, documenting the state's conveyance of the state's fee interest in the tidelands between the ordinary high and low water marks into private ownership. In ensuing years, the patent area was subdivided into small lots, which were developed with homes built upon pilings in an area known as Sandy Beach. Over time, homes and associated structures were constructed and extended waterward of the patented tidelands. Today, the Sandy Beach community consists of 43 single-family residents. Of the 43, 35 have improvements located on state sovereign land and are all currently under lease. In 2013, the Commission's compliance staff conducted a public outreach effort to educate the community on the Commission's jurisdiction, leasing practices, and lease application process. In addition to the community residents, this outreach effort included legislators for the area and other regulatory entities. In 2014, the law offices of Dana Dean advised staff that she had been retained by the Sandy Beach Improvement Association and its members. In April 2015, after working with the community and their representatives over the course of a year and a half, all parties came to an agreement on the terms and conditions of the lease. Next slide. All leases were authorized on February 9th, 2016, which included, next slide, sorry, which included, let me start over. All leases were authorized on February 9th, 2016, which included rent negotiated without an annual consumer price index increase and scheduled rent reviews on the 10th and 20th anniversaries. Rent for those properties with water-dependent recreational uses, docks, and berths is determined by a Category 1 San Pablo benchmark that was authorized by the Commission on February 25th, 2025, and is set at 20.6 cents per square foot. Rent for non-water dependent uses, portions of residence and decks, is determined by a Category 2 Sandy Beach benchmark that was last authorized by the Commission on August 29th, 2024, and is set at an undiscounted rate of $5.13 per square foot. The undiscounted rate is applicable to portions of the residence where you have full utility of the land. The Category 2 benchmark is used for decks, but a 75% discount is applied as this area does not have full utility of the land. Next slide. Benchmarks are used to establish uniform rental rates in specific geographic regions with large concentrations of similar facilities, mostly private recreational improvements within the Commission's jurisdiction. The use of benchmarks improves efficiency, consistency, transparency in how the Commission establishes rent for large numbers of similar leases, saving time, resources, and money for both the applicant and the state. The Commission generally updates its benchmarks every 5 years. In 2025, for the 2025 San Pablo Bay Category 1 benchmark, approved in February 2025, 8 commercial marinas were surveyed in the San Pablo Bay area. The surveys consisted of slip lengths and monthly rental rates. As I said, the current benchmark rate is 20.6 cents per square foot. Next slide. Category 2 benchmarks are based on and associated with nearby upland land values. To establish a Category 2 Sandy Beach rent approved by the Commission last year, appraisal staff conducted research and identified 10 recent residential property sales fronting the Mare Islands State along Sandy Beach Road in Solano County The sales here ranged from $250,000 to $1.2 million. And this is a list of those sales. All 10 sales were improved with single-family residents. Next slide. The methodology used here is consistent with all Category 2 benchmarks, and the data used to establish this specific benchmark was derived exclusively from those upland land values fronting Mare Island along Sandy Beach, where these leases are located. After isolating land values from the sales price, staff concluded a land value near the mean and median, or $57 per square foot. Per the California Code of Regulations, staff applied the 9% annual rate of return, which results in the undiscounted benchmark rate, as I said, of $5.13 per square foot. The discounted rate for the 2024 Category 2 benchmark rate is $1.28 per square foot. Next slide. We are now at the 10th anniversary with the revision of rent for all Sandy Beach properties. This slide shows an example of how rent is calculated. In this example, there are 600 square feet of dock charged at the Category 1 benchmark. There are 571 square feet of deck charged at the Category 2 benchmark, which is discounted, and 423 square feet of residence charged at the full Category 2 benchmark. Those are added together to arrive at the new proposed annual rent of $3,024. Next slide. Staff recommends authorization of the revision of rent for items 64 through 93, effective February 9th, 2026. Next slide. Thanks for your time. That concludes my presentation, and we are available to answer any questions.
Thank you, Vicki. Why don't you stay up there? Sure. I think there will be some questions, but first, why don't we turn to public comment? Michelle, do we have anyone who would like to address the commission on this issue?
Yes, our first speaker is Leslie Guth. Following Leslie is Orion Pritchard.
Leslie, please proceed with your comments. You may unmute yourself.
Hi. Thank you, commissioners. Myself and some of my neighbors respectfully request that the commission consider supporting our legislative proposal to contribute the state lands rental income generated by Sandy Beach to a fund to be expended exclusively for public interest activities and projects in this waterfront community. Such activities would include mitigating geological and infrastructure risks, as well as improving public use and access. Sandy Beach is a socioeconomically diverse community of only 40 homes. There are 40 homes that have properties here. There's the numbers are a little bit odd, so it might seem like there's 43 or 35. There are actually 40 households here at Sandy Beach. Based on the community's 2016 lease, Sandy Beach since has contributed $40,000 annually to state coffers. This current rate increase of 140% means Sandy Beach will be contributing about $100,000 to the state annually. Over 10 years, that's $1 million. While that's not a lot of money for the state, it's a significant amount of money for a small community of 40 homes. A similar set-aside is done in Lake Tahoe. And in 2016, then-Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom's office expressed interest in support of a set-aside for Sandy Beach. Expressed to us by staff, it's a small set aside for the state, it's a huge set aside for Sandy Beach. For this reason, again, we respectfully request that the commission consider supporting this legislation. Especially considering that state lands contributes $154 million to state coffers, this set aside for Sandy Beach could be used for the entire Vallejo waterfront, of which Sandy Beach is a part. And we would definitely want to partner with other agencies to administer these funds. So, again, we ask the commission to consider supporting this set aside. And we did submit a letter that we have sent to our legislators that is in the paperwork that I submitted to the commission last Thursday. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Leslie. Michelle, do we have anyone else who would like to address us?
Yes, our next speaker is Orion Pritchard. Following Orion, we have Jeremy Gray. Orion, please unmute yourself and begin your comment.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. I want to just agree with Leslie. I want to say there are the point of California State Lands is to help public access. There are significant things that are hindering public access, including a rock slide area behind our house and areas around derelict boats in South Vallejo. I encourage the commission to consider the proposal funded by Leslie, but supported by the rest of the Sandy Beach community as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next speaker, please.
Our next speaker is Jeremy Gray.
Hello. Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Jeremy Gray with JG Swiss POF LLC. We own property adjacent to the Sandy Beach community within the city of Vallejo limits. Regarding some of those slides, our property is wholly within the Costa del Rio Landscape Maintenance District, and the Sandy Beach residents own a Bobcat tractor or their SBIA homeowner association-like entity. So we won't get into that here, but we're committed to the full restoration of public access and public trust recognition in Sandy Beach. Our goal is to collaborate with regional nonprofits, and we've already begun doing that to align our land use with Vallejo's General Plan 2040, which does envision a continuous pathway for the public as close to the water as possible. While we generally support the commission issuing leases here, we urge you to instruct staff to reevaluate the staff reports used to justify current lease approvals and benchmark rates. We found significant discrepancies between staff claims and historical facts to assure the correct rates, terms, and requirements are set for the lessees. For example, staff reports often state that the applicants, quote unquote, own the uplands. However, recorded official documents seem to tell a different story. For example, I point to a 2015 grant deed for Ms. Guth's property, which explicitly accepts any portions that have ceased to be tidelands by erosion, artificial means, or accretion. Essentially, the very uplands claimed as private may legally be public trust land, and it's something that needs to be investigated further. Furthermore, while some residents like Guth here in her comments attached claim to support improved public access in their legislative proposals, appearing to want to use this lease money for community improvements, this directly conflicts with staff reports that downplay the historical and modern day public use of this area. The same public access to Sandy Beach that we have documented from historic newspapers going back to 1885 and continues to this day, especially with regards to enjoying the amazing San Pablo Bay views and recreational fishing. We ask the commissioners to direct staff to review the benchmark rate proposal and actual lease statements, including public access statements and ownership claims before proceeding further. Thank you and happy holidays.
Thank you very much for your comments. Michelle, do we have anyone else who would like to speak?
We have no other hands raised at this time.
Commissioners, do you have any comments or questions on this item? Okay. We have taken this as an informational item right now. Is that right?
We do need to vote.
Okay. Okay. I do want to ask for one clarification, and that is... one of the speakers mentioned that the increase is about 120% from the current rate, again, after a 10-year period. Does that sound about right to you?
It is about right.
So I just want to, and again, maybe it's because I'm thinking about the item we had earlier today about moorings, and as somebody who spent 20 years in real estate and developed housing where, you know, on the Again, in a previous life, before being in elected office, I was among those who was asked to pay government fees. If we peg fees purely to land value over impact, I think that we are going to find that there are some unintended consequences of that, because land values are going up again because of a lack of housing. And so that's not necessarily going to be consistent with an increase in inflation, for instance, and might not always be warranted in terms of what we should be charging the public for fees like this. And I understand that we have rules around it, but I also, and again, I'll be here another year, even though I won't be chairing it, and we have a strategic plan update. I think we really need to be thinking about this particular question of fees being based on the appraised value of like-kind property solely. Because again, the lack of housing, adding housing over the last 10 years has resulted in housing costs going up faster than inflation, and also, as we know, being 2 to 3 times that of any other state. And if we only use assessed value, we may be asking people to be paying fees that, number one, may not be warranted for us to do what we need to do as government with those fees. But more importantly, we may be adding to the lack of affordability for housing in the state. So that's something I'd really like staff to think about as we do our update, and I hope we can talk about that in the future. But I will go ahead and support this, and so if we have a motion.
Can I ask a...
Oh, of course, of
sorry,
course.
As you were speaking, I guess I just... And this is a question, a clarifying question around just our process and how we sort of handle, you know, our rent increases writ large for our leases. I know you noted in the presentation that when this was negotiated originally, there was as part of that negotiation, we landed that there would not be any cost of living adjustment, you know, mm-hmm. on a regular, I'm assuming, annual basis. So it would hold it at the current rate for the 10 years until we got to the 10 and then 20. Is that normative for us? And the reason I ask is because I think it's important to sort of understand how, back to the Lieutenant Governor's comment, how we are how we tie our lease adjustments to increase them. And then also I think the other piece too is, you know, there's a little sticker shock too, I think, if you don't have an adjustment and then 10 years later you have this 100 and I don't remember what you said, 20% increase. So I didn't know if that's normal practice for us or if this was sort of an exception.
Yeah, and I'll let Vicky correct me if I'm wrong, but normal practice is to include an annual CPI adjustment with rent reviews, typically at the 10th year anyway. So in this particular case, we had 30-year lease terms, which is on the longer end for us. So we did build in rent reviews at the 10th anniversary. We do quite a few leases that are more like 10 years or so. And so there is sort of a natural time to do a rent review at the 10th year when we're doing a new lease. And so, yeah, typically we build in an annual CPI adjustment. And in this particular case, we did some of the calculations, and the residents actually saved money by the structure of this particular...
Theoretically saved money.
No.
We did the math using the CPI for those for each
You're
year.
You're saying that had it gone up with CPI, well, because we had unusually high levels of inflation.
We did. And so Commissioner Perrault's perspective, it did lead to the sticker shock of the jump at the 10th year.
So I guess maybe again, I will support this as well today, but I think to the Lieutenant Governor's point, I think this would be good to be part of that conversation that we have, maybe as part of the strategic plan, to think about knowing that they're tied to CPI, whether it's this one or that's our normal practice for others, if that is the only and right tie, or if we need to consider other circumstances
or
to
caps.
Your point. Yeah. So anyway, I appreciate that. I just wanted an understanding about sort of how this fits into how we would normally approach this. And then I do agree that I think we need to look at it from a broader perspective as we think about what's the right way moving forward to the Lieutenant Governor's point about, not just tying it to home values and go from there. So, okay, thank you.
Great suggestions.
I appreciate you giving me a moment.
Do we have a motion?
I'll go ahead and move the
second.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion by Commissioner Perrault and a second by Commissioner Kunkel. No vote required, unanimous. Good?
Yeah.
Okay, motion passes.
Unanimous vote. Yes.
All right, unanimous vote. Thank you.
And then our last item is the item that we pulled from the consent calendar, item number 99.
Okay, item number 99.
And this will have a vote.
Okay, let's do it.
Yes.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and Commissioners. I'm Nicole Dabrowski, Chief of the Division of Environmental Science, Planning and Management for the Commission. I'm presenting on item 99, the issuance of a non-exclusive statewide general offshore geophysical survey permit to Merkel and Associates. I apologize, I've been sick. The Commission issues permits to conduct geophysical surveys on submerged sovereign lands underlying state waters adjacent to the coast and offshore islands of the state. The Commission has been the state agency with jurisdiction over geophysical survey activities in state waters since 1941. Geophysical surveys conducted under Commission permits use data gathering methods that follow a predefined course or spatial grid and obtain critical data on a variety of ocean resources and uses. These surveys conduct critical ocean bottom exploration for both scientific and engineering purposes. On September 20th, 2013, the Commission adopted a Mitigated Negative Declaration, or MND, and approved an update to the Commission's Low Energy Offshore Geophysical Permit Program, also known as the OGPP. In April 2014, the Commission adopted an addendum to the MND, including a revised mitigation monitoring program that requires equipment sound verification by the permittee, soft start procedures, prohibition on most nighttime survey operations, safety zone monitoring for marine animals by qualified marine wildlife monitors, and operational limits within marine protected areas and other designated sensitive areas. These operational requirements set forth in the mitigation monitoring program were codified in regulations in January of 2020, when Title II of the California Code of Regulations, Article 2.9.1, became effective and established requirements to ensure that geophysical surveys performed on state sovereign land address and minimize potential impacts to aquatic life and to the environment. The appendices to the MND constitute the technical and scientific basis for the OGPP. One report models how noise from typical geophysical survey equipment dissipates in seawater. Another provides a literature summary on impacts from geophysical survey equipment to marine animals. And the final appendix analyzed potential for take of marine mammals and concluded that no physical or behavioral harm would occur with the implementation of the previously mentioned mitigation. Both the adoption of the MND and addendum and adoption of the OGPP regulations included opportunities for public comment on the data analysis and the mitigation measures designed to minimize environmental impacts. Before the Commission today is an application from Merkel and Associates to conduct low-energy geophysical surveys using one of two hull-mounted side-scan sonar systems. Although side-scan sonar systems may operate at frequencies and the upper end of the hearing range of marine mammals. The established safety zones and marine wildlife monitoring would minimize any conflicts. The use of high-energy equipment, such as air guns or water guns, is expressly prohibited under the proposed permit. Merkle and Associates has provided staff with a marine wildlife contingency plan, including safety zones to be enforced by a qualified marine wildlife monitor, an oil and general spill contingency plan. In addition, they would require to submit pre- and post-survey data reports, including records of biological observations, and obtain approval from and comply with all other regulatory bodies. Additionally, there is a 20-day advance notice requirement to the Commission and the United States Coast Guard, notice to mariners regarding the location of the survey and the technical descriptions and specifications of all survey equipment to be used. Staff recommends the Commission approve the permit to Merkle and Associates. Staff are here to respond to any questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Michelle, do we have anyone who would like to address the Commission on this issue?
Yes, our first speaker is Nina Beattie.
How many do we have, Michelle?
At this moment, just Nina.
Oh, okay. Nina? Nina?
Good afternoon. This is Nina Beattie from Monterey. I oppose the application to conduct high-decibel sonar geophysical surveys statewide for 3 years, and I strongly urge you to reject this application. These surveys are inconsistent with protecting marine resources. Staff's conclusions are not supported by the evidence. Mitigations are not protections. A general permit is inconsistent with public trust uses and will substantially interfere with these uses and the needs through the use of the permit. Granting it is in direct contradiction to the best interests of the state and the ocean. Further, staff states in number 6, this activity involves lands identified as possessing significant environmental values. But when the Commission adopted the MND in 2013, staff concluded that such activity would not affect those lands. That conclusion is incorrect. Sonar geophysical surveys are destructive to marine life and the significant environmental values of the ocean environment. Sonar affects all species from humans to plankton by action of the decibel levels, the frequency, and the resonance. These are extremely high decibel levels. Hearing range is only one area of impact from sonar. U.S. Air Force found infrasound, which is inaudible, can kill. The Tacoma Narrows Bridge did not have ears, but resonance with a high frequency destroyed it. The same thing happens to a wine glass, which also does not have the ability to hear. The decibel levels of Merkle & Associates equipment are not provided, but the equipment used by others is approximately 191 to 237 decibels. Those levels are equal to or exceed Saturn V rocket levels. Saturn V rockets have no ears, as you know, but the power of those decibel levels would destroy the rockets except for sound deflection devices. The sound waves generated by sonar equipment are incredibly powerful and can maim and kill, literally smashing the sensitive rare creatures that live in the ocean, worsened further by resonance effects. Decibels are logarithmic. 110 decibels is OSHA's limit for human exposure for 30 minutes. 200 decibels is 1 billion times OSHA's limit. As sound travels great distance in the water, this work will affect people at our marine protected areas and in the nearby haul-out zones, as well as those a distance away. Any human divers will be endangered as well. I repeatedly sent information to Lands Commission staff. There's no justification for permitting this deadly equipment, which is actively killing marine life, in some cases in pursuit of mere topographical data. This is ecocide conducted along the coast, and I ask you to deny the permit application and protect the public trust. Thank you.
Okay, those are some pretty serious issues that were raised. So I would like to ask staff to take a moment and address those. Is this activity, could it endanger wildlife off the coast?
No, so side scan sonar has been used at least commercially since the 1960s, so it is used across the industry. It's used by the fishing industry for fish finding. If you could pull up the slide, I have one figure from an article in the journal Science, which is one of the leading scientific journals in the United States, which kind of shows, if you can look at the available slide. So it shows side scan sonar, if you look on the bottom figure, looking at the hertz, the frequency of that activity relative to, on the top slide, it shows the hearing ranges of different species, you'll see that side-scan sonar barely touches the upper range of the cetacean hearing range, whereas a huge array of other ocean uses, including large ships, small boats.
Sorry, where is side-scan?
Side-scan sonars are around 100 kilohertz.
Where is it on that?
So if you look in the blue bars, it's kind of in the middle on the...
Oh, I see. All right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So side-scan sonar barely touches the hearing range.
I'm sorry. I'm having trouble reading this chart.
So if it goes this way.
Yeah.
No, I don't mean by its size. I mean,
So with this
I'm pretty good at graphs here. I'm just having trouble understanding.
What the chart shows is two sections. The top is the hearing range for animals, organisms in the ocean. Okay. And then the bottom graph are these frequencies of various activities. So side scan sonar is there around 100 kilohertz. And whereas other things like explosives, air guns, dredging, you can see the broad range that those types of activities, the broad range of frequencies that those types of activities has. And so when you look up to the organisms that could be impacted by that type of range, we see that the overlap is pretty minimal for things like whales or cetaceans. And, you know, frankly, they're being impacted much more by some of these other activities than by side-scan sonar.
So the little kind of striped bar is all that it hits. Is that
correct?
What you're saying?
Correct.
So if we went up, it's only going to hit the two purple. Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I'm just trying to interpret the thing. Mm-hmm. So the small striped bar next to side-scan or sonar that's a little bit over the 100 kilo, or 100.
Mm-hmm.
And then going to the one, if we were to go straight up, that's the only thing that would actually
correct.
Hear that. Are those that? So those two like light purple violet lines, basically,
right?
Get
so
a little bit of it, maybe, and maybe the little blue, the blue one might. And I'm not really.
Yeah. So the lightish purple and then the slightly darker purple represent cetaceans with a higher frequency of hearing.
So they might be able to hear it.
They might be able to hear it, but because they can hear it does not mean that it causes an impact. And so there's mitigations built into the program where there's kind of a slow ramp up when they start to turn on the device to provide opportunities for the organisms to kind of swim out of the area.
Because this is multi-beam sonar, is that what you're saying?
This is side scan sonar. So it's two down.
I see.
So this is a very
that is all we are allowing is side scan sonar.
This is what they have requested to use.
Okay, not low frequency active sonar, not mid frequency active sonar,
correct.
Not multi beam sonar.
Side scan sonar.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So there are mitigation measures as part of the adopted CEQA document that were then codified in the regulations to minimize environmental impacts to these species.
Very good. All right. Commissioners, do you have any other questions? Do we have a motion?
So moved.
Second?
I'll second.
Do we have... you give us this complicated this language. Any objection to a unanimous vote? Unanimously approved. Very good. Okay. Our next order of business, I believe, is closed session. Is that right?
That is correct, Madam Chair. Our next order of business is closed session. Informational items 109 and 110 on the regular calendar, Government Code Section 11126, Subdivision C7, allows a state body to discuss real property negotiations in closed session. Provided that before the closed session, the state body in open session identifies the real property concerned and the person or persons with whom the negotiator may negotiate. In accordance with this requirement, I announce that the commission will conference in closed session with its real property negotiators regarding the following items. Informational item 109 addresses four applications for assignment of leases governing the use of existing offshore oil and gas pipelines traversing state waters associated with the Santa Ynez unit in federal waters, including the Elwood Pier and two mooring buoys offshore Santa Barbara County. Negotiating partners, State Lands Commission, ExxonMobil, Pacific Offshore Pipeline Company, and Sable Offshore Corp. under negotiation, price and terms. Lease numbers PRC 4977, PRC 5515, PRC 6371, and PRC 7163. Informational item 110 addresses applications for issuance of offshore sand mining leases known as the San Francisco Bay and Delta Sand Mining Project, located in San Francisco Bay, County of San Francisco. Negotiating parties, State Lands Commission, Martin Murrieta Materials Incorporated, and Hanson Marine Operations. Under negotiation, price and terms, lease numbers 709.1, 2036.1, 7779.1, 7780.1, and 7781.1.
Very good. We will now go into closed session. May we clear the room?
All right, we are back in open session. Call this meeting back to order. Dr. Dumlau, is there anything to report from closed session?
Yes. Pursuant to Government Code Section 1126, Subdivision C7, the Commission met in closed session regarding applications for the assignment of four leases governing the use of existing offshore oil and gas pipelines traversing state waters associated with the Santa Ynez Unit in federal waters, the Elwood Pier, and two mooring buoys offshore Santa Barbara County. Pursuant to Government Code Section 11126, Subdivision C7, the Commission met in closed session regarding applications for issuance of offshore sand mining leases known as the San Francisco Bay and Delta Sand Mining Project, located in San Francisco Bay, County of San Francisco. Back to you, Mr. Chair.
Great.
Commissioners, we do have two items to report out from closed session. The commission was presented with two settlement offers today. The first was a settlement offer by the Morro Bay Commercial Fishermen's Organization related to its petition for writ of mandate titled Morro Bay Commercial Fishermen's Organization versus California State Lands Commission in the Superior Court of San Luis County. The commission has reviewed the offer and has voted to reject it. The second item was from December 15th. By Signal Hill, and it's in the matter of In Re Signal Hill Services, Inc., Bankruptcy Chapter 7. And after due consideration of the proposed offer, the commission rejected the settlement.
Thank you very much. And I believe our next order of business is public comment. Dr. Dumlau and Michelle, do we have anyone signed up?
We have no hands raised for comment at this time.
And I don't see anybody here in person, so I believe with that, do any commissioners have final parting comments or questions?
I'll just say really quickly, wish the staff very happy holidays. And again, thank you for all the good work this year. And I hope you get a little bit of downtime.
And I will second the wishing of happy holidays. And on behalf of Chair Kunalakis and our final time sitting in this position, I will gavel us out. We are adjourned.